welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest.
How do you do? Good evening, good morning, whatever the case may be, wherever you are. I guess afternoon on Guam to the west. Eastward then to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands. South into South America. North all the way to the pole. And definitely worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. It's Friday night, Saturday morning. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Great here. Listen, somebody named Deke Richards in the state of Maine sent me an incredible story. And he gave me permission to read it, but I'd rather not. So, let's leave it at this. Deke, you contacted me earlier today with this. I would rather have you tell the story, Deke. It means more. So, if you want to do that by telephone, then you need to contact me the same way you did earlier today, in the next hour or so, and I will get you on the air. Sounds pretty secret, huh? Anyway, we'll see if he does. Now, do you remember the Washington Times story that we've been agog about over the last few days? This is one in which Dick Cheney was asked a question on the Diane Rehm show. And, well, guess what? I've got the man who asked the question on the show. And while the Washington Times got the important part right, they didn't get it quite right. And there's more to the story. And I've got the fellow who had Dick Cheney on the phone and actually asked the question. So I think in a moment we'll bring him on and then let him tell you firsthand what happened.
Get a new view of the world with Coast to Coast AM.
When do you see this entire picture unfolding?
It's unfolding right in front of us. The corporate construct runs our government. And most importantly, they keep us on the two-party system. As long as they can convince the American people that your choices between evildoers, the Democrats, or evildoers, the Republicans, they have absolute control of you. The biggest threat would be a genuine third party.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
Well, hello there and good morning in Canada.
Good morning, Art.
Hi there. I didn't ask, so I'll ask now. Do you mind if people know your name?
No problem.
No problem?
No problem.
Okay, what's your name?
Grant Cameron.
Grant Cameron. And you sent me some email, didn't you, Grant?
Yep.
Saying that you actually were the caller who called Dick Cheney. And I'm not familiar with the Diane Rehm show. And you said it was, NPR or something?
Yeah. And it's a show out of Washington. And she has quite a few of the Washington insiders on her show from time to time.
Okay, here's the part I don't get. Where are you in Canada?
Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
Just north of North Dakota.
Okay, so then the signal you get with NPR must come from North Dakota or something.
No, I pick it up on the internet.
On the internet?
Yeah. She has hers, like yours, she has archived all her shows, and so you can basically follow from there, see what guests are coming up, and...
All right, and she had she had Dick Cheney on.
That's right.
And here you are up in Canada, and you start, I guess, dialing, wanting to ask a question, and somehow you got through.
Yep. First caller through.
You were the first caller through. It's like winning the lottery. And so, obviously, the vice president is not going to really be ready for what you're about to ask. Did they screen your call?
They did, yes.
What did you tell them? You certainly couldn't have told them you were going to ask about UFOs.
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah. Well, she's had a few. She had Anthony Lake, who was the national security advisor for President Clinton on there. He faced the UFO question. She's had Carter on a couple times. I actually was on with Carter one time but didn't get to ask the question. The show ended. He's faced a UFO question on that show. So it's not that unusual that they would. They screened it. She just said she wanted it short and sweet because he was only taking, I think he took about five questions. That was it.
Huh.
He was only on for about three quarters of an hour. And part of it was the interview, so...
What an incredible opportunity.
And I think it's basically, as far as I know, I've done a lot of study on the presidents and vice presidents. I think it's only the third time that somebody inside the White House, a vice president or a president, has actually been faced with the UFO question.
Oh, I guess.
But a lot of them have before. Like Carter was faced with a question before he was president, and after the presidency. Ford faced it after the presidency. But as for inside the White House... Truman faced it right at the Roswell case. Eisenhower.
You're quite a historian on this issue, I can see.
Right, I'm fairly interested in the, you know, instead of going to people in the Air Force or something, to me it made sense to somebody go after the chief executive officer.
Go right to the top, always, sure, why not? But yeah. a Canadian, it's... You weren't just trying to embarrass our vice president,
no,
right?
No.
I mean, out of Canadian nationalistic fervor.
No,
okay. All right, so you called and you got through and you got the vice president of the United States and you asked him what?
Well, for the record, I'll give you the actual question that I asked him.
All right.
I said, since a statement made by George Bush last July, there's a vicious rumor circulating in the UFO community that you've been read into the UFO program. So my question to you is this. In any of your government jobs, have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? And if you have, when was it, and what were you told?
And the vice president said?
He answered, well, if I had been briefed on it, I'm sure it was probably classified, and I couldn't talk about it.
Well, that is, in fact, essentially... what the Washington Times said, pretty much, right down the same alley, but there's more, isn't there?
Yeah.
The rest of the stories, Paul would say.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was cut off as soon as the question, I guess they didn't want secondary questions, so I was cut off. I actually didn't hear the answer.
No, they don't want anybody yelling, follow up, Mr. Vice President?
Yeah.
No.
So Diane Rehm asked him as soon as he answered that, she said, is there investigation going on within this administration, Mr. Vice President, as to UFOs? And what Cheney answered to that was, I have not come across the subject since I've been back in government. Oh, since like January the 20th. And then he added, I've been in a lot of meetings, but I don't recall one on UFOs.
I don't recall one. That's Americanese, political Americanese for... I don't remember, which is what you're told to say, you know, in some situation you might be in where you would incriminate yourself horribly. Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Don't recall.
Yeah.
Don't recall. Okay.
But it really wasn't true because he said, I haven't come across the subject since I've been back in government. And the original question that I asked him was the statement made by George Bush, which referred to an incident last July with Charles Huffer, who had come across Bush and Cheney together at a campaign stop in Arkansas, and he questioned Bush, and Bush made this...
Yeah, but he was technically right, because he said in government, right?
Well, since he came back, but what he's saying is he hasn't come across the UFO subject, but based on this last July incident, a congressional letter of inquiry related to the July incident was sent to him, so he has seen the subject since he
came
back to government.
Well, how about that?
And it wasn't initiated by me. I didn't even know that this had occurred until after I asked my question, but I was informed by Charles Huffer that Asa Hutchinson, his congressman, had forwarded a letter as of March 19th to the vice president, and he informed him, please know that I will follow up and make sure that the vice president has indeed seen the letter and plans to respond.
So then, from your point of view then, the vice president of the United States shaped the truth.
Yeah, on the second part, on the part about whether he was aware of the UFO thing.
Or once again, it could have been faulty recollection.
The first part, I think he actually told the truth on this part about it being classified, which really surprised
me. I agree with you completely. It is an astounding response.
Because I don't think he for one second thought there was a UFO question coming. In fact, when he was on, it was the day when they released the people out of China, and that's, I think, why he was on the show, was to sort of promote this whole incident that was occurring later on in the day. And none of the questions applied to that. My question was a UFO question up front, and all the rest dealt with his oil income and his Middle East connections. So he basically didn't take any questions on China at all. And
you would think though, with the past record of Diane Rehm's show, questions like these to officials, somebody would have briefed Mr. Cheney ahead of time, saying, "If you're going on the Rehm show, you're going to get a UFO question, or you may well get a UFO question."
Yeah, that's possible.
You would think so.
Yeah, although, if only three times in somebody inside the White House, and he was actually in the White House when he answered the question. So it's a long shot. I mean, Carter was asked, I think, 5 years ago a UFO question, and Lake was maybe 2-3 years ago that this occurred. So it wasn't, I'm pretty sure he wasn't prepared for it. And he didn't sound too happy. If you hear the tape, he wasn't too happy.
Oh, I would love to hear the tape. I guess since you were on, you were taping yourself, I'll bet, huh?
No, I was cut off. I didn't hear the answer. I had no idea until it came on to the archive the next day.
Oh, well, then you have it from some other way.
Well, that's on the archive, because I heard it the next day. But
yeah. But what I'm saying is that's too bad, because now we would need Diane Rehm's permission to play it. In other words, that's her copyrighted material.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, listen, thank you so very much for coming up here and explaining this to us. You, as a dispassionate Canadian, a very calm Canadian, all Canadians are calm, seems like, you take this to mean, his answer, you take this to mean, don't you, that there is indeed a classified program on UFOs in the U.S., and that he has indeed been briefed and couldn't talk about it because it's classified, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, we all take it the same way, too.
Yeah.
I sure do appreciate your coming on the line. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for giving me the time.
Yeah, take care. Thought you might want to hear that. Pretty good call, sir. Good going. All right, well, tonight, what are we going to do? We're going to do a lot of things, I guess. It's going to be hope-free. So, I don't know. We'll just see. Oh, I do know one thing we're going to do. Next hour. In fact, call your friends. Call anybody you know and love and care about. And if you're listening to the radio, then absolutely just don't go away, because It was 2 years ago. I did a show with Dr. Tricia McGill and Dr. Jeff Long. Actually, it was February 4th of 99. And so, on this show, we had a young lady that they brought forth whose name was Sarah. Is Sarah? She's still with us, and she proceeded to tell the single most incredible, dramatic, involved, frightening, hopeful story of near death that you've ever heard in your whole life. I mean, this is an incredible story. Sarah was on her way back from church volunteer work. I mean, we're talking quite a nice young lady on her way back from a volunteer work at the church, and she was hit by a vehicle and thrown God knows, I forget how many feet, and died. She died, or I should say she had an NDE. Maybe when you die, you never come back, but boy, oh boy, what you will hear in this account, if you just stick with it, every word of the way is the strongest, most incredible account of near death that I've ever heard told anywhere, anytime, period. So I think I'm going to replay that in the next hour. A bright, very bright flash in the sky captivated scores of people all across Western Australia last night as the program went on, I guess, who witnessed what may have been dust shed by a comet thousands of years ago. Perth Observatory astronomer Jamie Biggs said the event was seen as far north as Dangarang, I think it is. I slaughtered that, I'm sure. 170 kilometers north of Perth and as far south as Albany, 410 kilometers south of Perth. So from 170 north to 410 kilometers south, something really streaked across the sky. Now, of course, how did they know it was dust from a comet? How could they possibly know it was dust from a comet? Sounds good, right? Like a meteor. But, I mean, did they collect any? I always question these things. A three-year-old Ronert Park girl died after being infected with a rare organism that destroyed her brain as she lay in a coma for 2 days. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle. Just how Aletha Lee Willis contacted or contracted the amoeba Balamuthia, which is so unusual, scientists discovered it only 11 years ago, remains a total mystery. It's like science fiction, said the girl's grandmother, 44-year-old Teresa Powers. I've never seen anything like this in my life. Well, it's not science fiction to the experts, however. They say the disease caused by the amoeba quickly ravages the brain and is invariably fatal. In fact, Aletha died April 11th, a little more than 3 weeks after she came down with flu-like symptoms. Her death left her family struggling to comprehend why something so bizarre would strike their little girl. How did she get it? How can something that's supposed to be so rare, just rear its head up, asked the grandfather. How rare is it since it has come out of the darkness and taken her life? Scientists know very little about this organism, whatever it is. They don't know where it's found, how many may be out there, or they don't know how it enters the body. It's so rare, there have been no financial incentives to investigate it, according to a professor at Tulane. Weiser said experts believe the organism thrives in water and infiltrates the body through the eyes or through wounds. It's just absolutely astounding. It just goes and destroys your brain. And this poor little girl died, and they don't have even a clue what killed her or how it got in her. Well, I guess they do know, of course, why she died, but my God. Aletha was a bright, gap-toothed little girl with a radiant smile, her grandparents said. She adored her cat. Nice little girl, in other words. She liked to put olives on her fingers and show them to everyone. Fell ill March 20th. 2 days later, doctors at Ronert Park Medical Center diagnosed her condition as a flu, recommending giving her Tylenol and sending her home. Aspirin, go home, right? By March 24th, her fever soared to 103 degrees. She was unable to eat. Her grandparents, who are legal guardians, raced her to Santa Rosa Memorial Hospital. Doctors kept her there overnight for observation. Her condition took an alarming turn for the worse next day, as grandfather held her while physicians prepared tests. She had a seizure right in my arms, the granddad said. They ordered an MRI and spinal tap right away. A little improvement on the 26th. Then they thought she might have meningitis, but back come the seizures. So her condition grew steadily worse as she lay in isolation in intensive care at Children's. When we came in, according to Dr. Michael Schauberg, she was critical. Anyway, of course, she didn't make it, bottom line. And it's just some horrible new little thing that we're hearing about. Rare, they say. very rare, but they always say that at the beginning, that destroyed this little girl's brain. So it is interesting, is it not, that we live in such a sort of a new time for diseases. I mean, look at all this emerging stuff. Mad cow disease that could eventually, I guess, if it went crazy, make it so none of us could eat beef anymore. If it were to go worldwide, that certainly would be the effect, right? Hoof and mouth, thousands, maybe a million animals being killed. All kinds of new diseases and problems for humanity. Anyway, we'll go to open lines here shortly. We may even do a little truth or trash during the night. Hey, the Russians say they're going to go to Mars by the year 2020.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
But she lets me down every time. Can't make her mind. She's no one's lover tonight. With me, she'll be so.
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
Good morning, all, for most of you. I should stop saying that evening for some and early evening at that for others and afternoon for a few. So, I don't know. We cover a lot of territory. Good day. Maybe I should say good day. Good day like the Australians. Russia says it's going to go to Mars. Russia has overcome all major obstacles to manned interplanetary flight and should be ready to send humans to Mars in the second decade of this century, according to the head of a once-secret space science institute. This is in the London Times, by the way, just so you know. 15 years of trial and error aboard the Mir space station have given Russia unmatched experience in choosing training, feeding, supporting crews of space flights lasting a year or more, according to Anatoly Grigorov. It also has yielded vital information on keeping crew members sane 280 million miles away. Even American experts believe that the Russians have a lead in dealing with extended periods of weightlessness and the psychological problems of orbiting rather than flying away from Earth. Our engineers believe we can do this by 2020. And from a medical point of view, there are no big hurdles left to hinder such a mission. Isn't this amazing? The professor said that he startled the space science world earlier this month with a prediction that Russia would dispatch a crew to Mars as early as 2016. The forecast raised eyebrows not only because Mir and with it the core of Moscow's manned space exploration program had plunged into the South Pacific a few days earlier, but also because with a projected GDP of, for 2001 of $331 billion, that's gross domestic product, right? That's $54 billion less than the Netherlands. Russia is ill-equipped to finance an expedition that NASA estimates could cost $400 billion. $400 billion. And in a whole year, Russia only has $331 billion, their entire gross domestic product. So how could they possibly do it? And yet they're saying that they're going to do it, that he can do it. That Russia can do it, and apparently wants to do it, and they're talking about Mir 2 as well. Isn't this a mystery? Mir 2? Remember we caught that night? Remember that? When I caught what the cosmonaut said? Mir 2? And I said, what? Well, sure enough, Mir 2 they're talking about, and they're talking about, again, maybe they'd have to have Mir 2 if they were going to Mars. So maybe they're really serious about going to Mars. I hope we consider it a race and get off our butts.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
Listen, don't miss it. Don't miss it. If there's any way you can catch it by computer after it's run live as it runs tomorrow night. We're doing the first ever radio program done by myself anyway with the late Father Malachi Martin on the subject of exorcism. I'm booking a show later in, in May, on exorcism with somebody else. However, Bob Larson, as a matter of fact. But I think you'll find that tomorrow night's show will probably kind of scare you to death. Father Malachi Martin was the exorcist. And a remarkable man. I think most of you know about him. Those that don't are going to have an opportunity to find out tomorrow night. Saturday night, Sunday morning. The original, the first Father Malachi Martin program that we did on exorcisms. You don't want to miss it, believe me. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Hi.
Father Malachi Martin, actually, if anyone out there is truly listening to your show, and this is one show that you don't want to miss, because that man, really, he gave me hope that the fact that maybe that truly religion does not have a truly closed eye to what's going on in the world.
There's nobody to replace him.
There truly isn't, sir.
That's right. There's no one to replace him. That's all I would say.
One quick question. Let me take you back a little bit. Remember in 1989, if you recall, there was a CNN crew, a news crew that had gotten caught by a tornado. It was a very famous footage of them getting trapped underneath a bridge.
Oh, yes.
And remember, there's always been a little quote of mine that I've always loved, is they've always called a tornado the finger of God. And it was one of those days, sir, it was like 1989. It was right before the Berlin Wall coming down. And what the crux of my conversation here tonight, sir, is, it's amazing how certain things can be a trigger effect. In fact, I can remember listening to your show in Alaska in 1995, listening to you talk about the quickening and how things truly have come to fruition as far as what you've talked about. But my point of this call is since then, 1989, it's ironic, parts of your radio show have inspired me to do this too, is I've been capturing different live broadcasts and different snippets of, video since then. And it's amazing, sir, and we've talked about this before, we're such a society of where we get so much news so fast, and it seems like as we take each story, we tend to take it, accept it, and then move on. And it seems like each day we seem to replace the last day's horror, and we don't seem to really stand and stop and really ponder what's going on.
I know.
And it's until you start putting all these pieces of the puzzle together and you start seeing a consistent timeline that you truly see that what has happened in our past. And
Somebody suggested that we do an entire show. And I put it aside and held it. Do an entire show just on, hey, what the hell's going on?
Oh, truly, sir. I mean, every day, if you put the pieces of the puzzle together, in fact, if you go back, even right now we're going to the Bush Part 2, even if you go back to like the late 1980s and early 1990s, what happened then is set the course for what's happening now. And it's amazing how we tend to always live in the moment for today and just maybe possibly a little bit in the future. But if we don't stop and reflect on our past, we truly don't learn anything, and we can't be right for our present or even our future.
Agreed.
And I do appreciate it, sir, and I just want to, my main point of the call was is we all need to stop and put the pieces together, sir, because otherwise we won't get the clarity we all need in this world.
Did you just get out of the military?
No, sir.
Why do you say sir so much? I did that after I got out of the Air Force for a long time. I couldn't stop myself. I finally stopped myself.
Well, it's funny you say that because I've done quite a few talk shows, and it's interesting the reaction I get. A lot of people, some people don't like it because it makes them feel old. Some people like it because they like the fact that it shows respect. But it's what my parents taught me, in fact, and it's just something I've always been instilled with.
Well, good for your parents. All right, thank you very much for the call. That was very nice. Thank you. Not too many people do that anymore. Do they? When you first come out of the military service, you're saying that a whole lot to everybody. And it takes you quite a while to realize that you're out and that life has changed. And believe me, life in the military and life out of the military are entirely different things. It's like, boom, your life got utterly 180 degrees turned around. It's really that different. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art. How you doing? Kathy from Woodbridge.
Kathy from Woodbridge.
You know, it's funny. Today I talked to one of my, another talk show host that I call often, and he said to me, first thing he says to me is, oh, you must be very happy now at nighttime. Now think about how that sounded.
Well,
to all the viewers who are listening, what did he mean? Now, I knew he meant that Art Bell was on. He knew that I knew that, but not many other people know that.
Not if you take the entire tri-state area's population.
Right. You know?
This was on WABC, of course.
I thought I would let you know that. Now, I don't know why I find myself telling you about movies the last two times I've called, but
all right.
There's a movie out. It wasn't the greatest movie in the world, but it was interesting. It was Space Cowboys with Clint Eastwood. You probably didn't rent it yet.
I just saw it on pay-per-view. I didn't actually see it, but I mean, it's available, so I can see it.
Well, you know what the interesting thing about that video was to me?
What?
You know how many times you sat there and said, I know we have nukes in space. I know we've had them there.
Oh, is that what is that what it's about?
Think about that satellite that they were trying to give aid to.
Well,
and it was Russian.
What do you think about nukes in space? Let's talk about that for a second. We know we've got nuclear weapons, right?
Yes.
And we know that if we have them in space, and then we would have an advantage. We would have no launch, no boost phase, no anything. We would simply, boom, on your head, there's a nuke, right? It would just happen. There'd be no defense, no even dreams of SDI or anything else. So
that's right.
Now you know there's a treaty, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to ask yourself, do you think they're observing that treaty?
Hell
and then,
no.
Then after you ask yourself that, ask yourself then, do you really think we're observing that treaty?
No, of course not. I just worry if those things get off course by a meteor or something else or something goes wrong and they happen to come our way when we don't want them to. Whether they be ours, that would be friendly fire, folks, okay, or whether they be theirs. That's what I think about.
Well, Kathy, there's a sequence of things that would have to be entered, I think, before anything could happen. So, you know, otherwise a nuke is just a nuke. It's not good to have in space.
Right.
But I'm not too concerned about an accident, but I'm with you. They're up there. You know damn well they're up there.
Art, before I let you go, Drudge said last week, it didn't make much sense to the regular news, but you must have heard it. Is there really a Pope watch? Are they really watching that, you know, any day now? Because that's the way Drudge let it on. That CBS News was going to be watching, going to be setting cameras up there and waiting for those three puffs of smoke.
Yeah.
And until I hear it from you, I'm not going to believe it.
I appreciate the call.
Okay.
Take care, Kathy. Yeah. The last few times that I've seen the Pope, and I'm sure it's true of many of you as well, he certainly looks as though he's at the end. That he has hung on this long is absolutely astounding, I think. you know, a testament, really a testament to the will of an incredible man to hang on as he, and do as he has done, continue to perform. Absolutely unbelievable, and so if there is such a watch, I wouldn't be surprised. A little morbid, I'd say. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah, Art, Max from Spokane.
How you doing, Max?
Pretty good. I was wondering if I could get your comment on three quick subjects that all tie in. It's Russia going to Mars.
Yes.
And it's the one rich man that's paying $20 million to go up to the space station.
Oh, well, let's tackle them one at a time.
Well, I want to tie them all in because, just real quick.
Okay.
The trip to Mars from Russia, and I think that the Chinese are also planning on going to Mars. There's the rich guy going to the space station, and that video of that new Russian jet on your website.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, how come like all these communist countries are kind of looking good? I mean, where's America now? I mean, shouldn't we have plans to be, you know, where's our new jets and our plans to go to Mars? I mean, they're kind of looking good. Well, America's not looking too good.
Darn, that isn't exactly what I was saying after I read that story. Okay. Now, you know, maybe they're blowing a bunch of Russian gas.
Oh, they just propaganda? Or...
But on the other hand, maybe not. Now, I can't conceive of how they financially would accomplish this. That's the only thing that makes you think gas. They don't have the money. They just don't have the money.
What about China now? Aren't they planning to... Aren't they going there, too, or planning on going there? Or?
Maybe the Russians in concert with the Chinese.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's all a big mystery. But it's good. I love mysteries, and this is a beaut.
Yeah. That jet, though, on your webpage?
Yes. The SU-37.
I'd love to ride in that.
Not me. Not on my best day. No way. I don't know if you've seen that video, but... Nobody would ever have imagined that a jet could do such things. Now listen to me. A very serious thing is coming up here in about 8 minutes, actually after the news at the top of the hour. A really serious thing. If ever I wanted you to just stop what you were doing and devote the appropriate amount of time to listen to what's coming up, it's tonight. Sarah's NDE is unlike anything you've ever heard in your life. I sat here at first thinking, just a story. And I've heard many stories over the years, as you know, on this program. And just a story. But as it unwound, and as you learned about this young lady, and as you heard the detail she provided, which was astounding, of what happened to her, your mouth, your jaw will fall open. So all I can say is call up your friends, tell them, tune in the Art Bell Show in this coming hour. It's an amazing thing you're going to hear. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art.
Hi. Extinguish your whatever it is.
I just did.
Okay, thank you.
This is Kevin, and I'm calling from a little town of Mayfield in the state of New York.
All right. Welcome.
Welcome. The man that called you from Canada with the UFO question,
yes,
he was also, and probably still is, involved in UFO research and was one of the publishers of a monogram on MJ-12 and government involvement with UFOs, and this dates back from...
I wouldn't be surprised at any of that. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at any of that. He sounded like an aficionado, no question about it.
Yeah, he was one of the guys that got in contact with a professor... from then Penn State University, who knew people that were involved with crash recovery UFO research.
Hmm.
And they called him and wrote to him and got some very enigmatic conversations. Obviously, the guy did not want to speak about it.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole episode was extremely interesting, and I think that is still available through MUFON.
Well, he's an interesting guy. I've got his phone number. I thought the exchange with our vice president was astounding and revealing, really revealing, for anybody listening. And what more can I say? Maybe I ought to get hold of him and find out what more he's got. But
you might find more interesting stuff.
I might. That's called fishing, and I fish. All
good
right.
Fishing, Art.
Yeah, thank you very much, and take care. Yeah, Sarah's NDE, it's one of those moments in radio history in years. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it won't affect you the same way that it did me. But I think it will. I really think it will. It was astounding. So, get hold of your friends. Tell them it's coming up. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. This is Gemini from Oakland, California.
Hi, Gemini.
Hi. One quick question, then I wanted to relate something. The Father Malachi thing in California, will it be start at 10 o'clock our time?
The program will be, yes.
On the computer.
Oh.
Because I know Dreamland.
I would think it would start on the computer when it starts on, 10 o'clock.
Yeah, because, you know, Dreamland switched from Sunday to Saturday, so I was confused.
Thank you for saying that. Yes, yeah. That's right. Beginning this week, Dreamland moves from Sunday to Saturday.
Yeah. So anyway, remember those two ladies from Florida that you had on that do the psychic clearings?
Yes.
They're fantastic. Anyway, I called them up because I've been kind of bogged down, and I've been kind of feeling some things for years that I didn't want to mention to people because it seemed kind of weird.
Bogged down or...
Energy-wise.
Or do you... as in succubus or incubus?
No, as in just feeling oppressed.
Well, all you need is vitamins for that.
No. So anyway, I don't know. Anyway, I called them, and I arranged for a personal clearing.
Yes.
And, you know, they call you afterwards and everything, and they said, and I didn't tell them a thing about myself.
And?
And they called me, they said, I don't know.
First-time callers, area code 775-727-1222.
Wait a minute, I'm going to have to edit that out. I realize I realize in the heat of the moment, the words slipped out. It's what all pilots say before they hit the ground. Now everybody knows.
Okay.
So anyway, they cleared you of something or another.
They said that there were 6 ETs in my house, that I had implants in my head and my abdomen.
Holy smokes!
That I had interdimensionals that were putting blocks between me and my higher self and between my higher self and God.
Good Lord!
And that I was just filled with gunk, and they said, my God, how are you alive, you know? But we got rid of them, and I'm going...
So you're now claiming you're cleared, right?
They're claiming I'm cleared.
Well, do you feel cleared?
Well...
Come on now. Do you feel cleared?
Well, I do remember that I've been abducted since childhood, and I didn't tell them that, and they said, do you know you've been abducted since childhood?
I repeat, do you feel cleared?
Yeah, the jury's still out on that.
All right. Well, when the jury comes in, you call us and let us know, please. Call your friends. Sarah is next.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
I'd like to know, 'cause here I go. I don't want your lonely mansion with a tear in every room. All I want's the love you promise beneath the haloed moon. But you think should be happy with your money and your name, and hide myself in sorrow while you play your cheating game. Silver threads and golden needles cannot mend this heart of mine, and I dare not drown my sorrow in the warm
Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
Good morning, most of you. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. And, you know, every few years in broadcasting, something so profound comes along, and it just catches you by surprise, and so you don't get a chance to promote it. Something like that happened to me. Tonight, I've got a chance to promote it. We're going to do it. Sarah's NDE.
Take Coast to Coast AM with you anywhere on your mobile phone. CoastToCoastAM.com can be conveniently accessed on your iPhone and most Android platforms, which means that you are never without your Coast to Coast AM fix. If you're a Coast to Coast Insider subscriber, you can listen to the show live in the middle of the night or previous shows 24/7. Plus, you can browse all the great photos, videos, and news stories. Keeping up with Coast to Coast AM has never been easier with our Coast Insider service. Now, we take you back to the past. On Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Not all that frequently will I ask you to just please sit back, relax, and listen to every single word you're about to hear. A lot of people might have walked away from the radio or thought, oh, it's just another story, and it frankly began that way, but it is the most remarkable near-death experience I've ever heard in my whole life, and it will affect you profoundly, I think, if you listen to the whole thing. Really just put down whatever you're doing and listen to it. It occurred on February 4th, 1999, when I was doing a show with Dr. Tricia McGill and Dr. Jeff Long. And since it was mentioned last night, I went, all right, let's see if we can find it and get it on the air. And that's exactly what we're doing right now. So if you have a friend, it's probably almost too late to call them, though I guess you could. You really ought to hear this. Everybody, I think everybody ought to hear this. So if you're ready up to the network, roll it.
Back now to my guests, Dr. Jeff Long and Tricia McGill. Hi, you two.
Hi.
All right, let's do it. Here comes, from, I think, Las Vegas, somebody named Sarah. Sarah?
Yes?
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Sarah, stay good and close to the phone for us and,
okay.
And project. And if you would, just tell us what happened to you, Sarah.
Well, my near-death experience happened in 1989. I was bicycling home from a volunteer position, and I got hit by a pickup truck from behind, traveling at about 50 miles an hour. Truck slammed into me, and I was catapulted 60 feet forward. My lungs collapsed. Most of my internal organs ruptured. I broke my pelvis. I was pretty much roadkill at that point.
Roadkill?
Yeah. Fortunately, there was a police officer nearby who radioed an ambulance, and I was taken to a hospital rather quickly, but...
Were you off on the side of the road, or going...
No, I was in the bike lane, actually.
In the bike lane?
Yeah, the woman was racing for a light, and she didn't see me.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
And you got thrown 60 feet with just about everything internally ruptured.
Oh, it was bad.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So they 911, ambulance comes.
Right. Of course, I don't have any memory of any of that, though. That information was all told to me afterwards.
You were out cold.
Yeah. And I was having my NDE at that point, as far as I can tell.
Well, all right. Is there any... Here, okay. I'd like to understand from that moment that you got hit. Obviously, you were not... You didn't have any warning that you were about to be hit, did you?
No, really? None at all. In fact, I'd never even seen the face of the woman that hit me.
Wow. So just bang.
Yeah.
And that's it. All right. So what is your first recollection? Your first recollection?
The first thing that I remember was being in a very complete, utterly black place. I didn't have any sense of up or down or direction or perspective. It was just as black as you can imagine. And in this place, I had an awareness that I still had a body, but... Other than that, I had no idea where I was or what was happening next at all. You know, I was just kind of stunned.
Was there any sense of the real world. The Sarah was...
No.
No?
No, it was...
You didn't rise up and see your body and all that stuff?
No, I was in a... It was as if I was in a black box, except there were no walls. I couldn't see anything anywhere. There was nothing but black. And it was very black, too. You know, they described velvet black.
No, I understand. And you still had a sense that your body was there?
That I still had a body, yes.
Well, the first thing I would do if I had that kind of consciousness, I guess I would, even in the black, to retain my sanity, I would try and touch myself and feel my hands and my arms and my body to see if I really was physical.
Well, I don't remember doing anything like that. All I remember is that I had an awareness of kind of arms and legs. You know, that idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I was there for an unknown length of time where nothing happened. I was just in this black place.
Did you have emotions? Were you terrified?
I was stunned more than anything else. It was just kind of a, it was actually kind of a neutral feeling more than anything else. But, it quickly changed.
A neutral feeling?
Yeah. Kind of, okay, where am I, and why am I here,
yeah.
And why is it that there's nothing
yeah.
here but me?
Right. No sense of anything else, any other presence, beings,
nothing.
Or...
Nothing at all.
Wow.
Just dark.
But you say that changed.
Yes. At one point, often what seemed to be the distance, because it was farther away from me, I started hearing a hum, and then I saw a little pinprick of light. And the sound began to get louder, and it got closer to me, and as the whatever it was drew closer, I noticed that it was a creature, that the creature was surrounded by flames, in all the various colors of flames, reds and yellows, and it was, I don't know, big. Like, it seemed like it was 8 feet tall to me, and it was huge. And it had huge teeth and huge eyes, and it was, there was a humming all around it, and it was making, you know, it was growling and gnashing its teeth, and it was drooling. And from what I remember, the body of the creature itself was black. And it just was coming toward me at an incredible rate.
And you discerned this black against the white because you had been in total blackness, right?
Right. Well, against the flames. It was completely covered with flames.
Brother.
Flames were shooting out of it. It had like a huge, not like a halo, but more like it was surrounded by flames that shot out from its body.
How old were you when this occurred?
27.
Whew. All right, so here comes a creature that looks, what, like a dragon? Or is there any way to describe?
The closest thing that I could say is that it looks, a demon, really, more than a dragon.
A demon?
A demon. It was very demonic, yeah. It had a huge gnashing teeth, and it had long, scaly hands, and it was, it was stomping up and down, and huge eyes. I guess it was draconic in aspect, but not like you would think of a dragon. It didn't have wings or anything like that, although it did have flames. But the flames weren't coming out of its nose or anything like that. It was just surrounding it.
Huh. So how intellectually awake were you?
I was terrified at that point. I don't know. There's no other way to describe it. I was awed and terrified at whatever this was that was coming at me.
So you had enough sense about you to have the hell scared out of you?
Oh, I was utterly, I was frozen in fear.
I mean, this sounds like something out of the movie Alien, you know, that horrid little creature.
Yeah,
actually.
Except it was big. And it was flaming, too. It wasn't just slobbering, and it was looking at me. Do you know what I mean? It had intent that was on me.
You, yes.
Yes, it was coming for me.
Oh,
yes.
My. Did you at all, I mean, I'm sure you just had raw fear, so you didn't have time to intellectualize, but at some point you must have wondered, am I dead? Have I gone into another dimension? Have I time-slipped? Something or another. Did you think about any of that? In other words, why you were here, where you were, all of that?
only before the creature started coming toward me did I think about anything like that. Once I realized that this was something that was coming toward me and had an intention of dealing with me,
mm-hmm.
there was nothing but terror in my mind. You know, and I was just in awe because I'd never seen anything like this ever. It was so fantastic, so much beyond the realm of anything in ordinary reality, especially because nothing, there was nothing else around it to compare it to. It's just black and this thing.
Okay, when I first called, I think a man answered. Was that your husband?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you have children?
Yes, I do.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Have you led a reasonably good life, do you think?
Well, you know, when this happened, which was now 10 years ago, it took me that long, as Jeff was saying for him, it took me about 10 years before I was really able to talk about this to anyone
sure.
else.
Sure.
I had really led a very ordinary life. I hadn't really lived very long and done very much. You know what I mean? In terms of...
Yes, I do.
I didn't really have time to really create too much havoc. I felt that I really had led a rather ordinary life in most aspects up until that point, you know.
Yeah.
That was another thing that seems and continues to seem fantastic to me.
I mean, you sound articulate. You sound like a housewife. You sound pretty normal to me.
Oh, I am. I listen to you, so I don't know.
Well, all right. Well, I might put you out there a notch or so.
Okay, but you're not that normal then.
Well, I would consider myself to be a little bit, yeah, outside of the norm. But in terms of the way I relate to the world, yeah, you know, I hold a job, I pay my taxes, all that stuff. You know.
So here comes this...
This creature.
Demon, I guess. Demon.
Well, that's the way I look at it, yeah. It was.
Oh, there is one more thing I need to ask you, and that is,
sure.
So we can put this in perspective, your religious background.
Oh, I was raised an Episcopalian.
Strict?
No.
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 So.
Which is a really rather gentle sect, as far as the sects go, I think.
Gotcha. Right.
Can I ask you one thing, Sarah?
Sure.
Didn't you tell us at the Friends of Iams group that I have on Sundays that you were coming back from a volunteer job at the church?
Yes.
And you were on your way home from the church.
Yes, I was.
On your bike when you got hit by a hit-and-run driver.
Yes. In fact, I was getting ready to do a job as a deaconess at the church the very next day. And I was coming home happy, happy, happy when this happened to me.
So
I was on top of the world at that point.
So not only were you doing something for the church,
yes.
but you felt good about yourself?
Oh, I was very happy at that point, yes. And I was on my bicycle, and, you know, I wasn't in a car, and I was very happy about that because it was a lovely country road that I was riding on, and it was a beautiful evening. You know, it was, it really caught me by surprise and turned me upside down, literally, and everything after that, too.
Also, Art, I might mention that Sarah is carrying a lot of the physical scars of that experience, too. Sarah, isn't it your right arm that's pretty much paralyzed?
Yeah, I lost the use of my right arm as a result of the injuries from the accident afterwards.
How about the rest of you? I mean, collapsed lungs, internal organs?
It took a long time before I could walk. And I suffered from a concussion also, so I had a complete loss of identity. I had to teach myself to read.
My God.
Again, and all those normal things that happen when you get a really, really serious injury like that.
Amnesia.
Oh, yeah. It took a long time for me to become who I am now.
You had to actually learn to read again?
Yes, I did. I couldn't read. I started with kids' book, like, you know, Go Spot Go. And I remember it being a big achievement for me when I could read People magazine. And then I went on from there because I had, before the accident, I'd been, and still am, a very avid reader. I love to read. And the fact that that had been taken away from me was almost too much for me to bear.
Did parts of your, I know we're jumping ahead here, but did parts of your previous life, the reading you did, the things you enjoyed, did they slowly begin to return to you?
Only parts of it. Actually, what I actually had to do as part of my remembering who I was I went back and visited my childhood home and tried to find as many people as I knew that I'd grown up with so
of
they
course.
Could tell me about myself. And so I could sort of fit it as, oh, well, I guess this happened to me because you're telling me that it did, even though I don't really have a conscious memory of it.
Were you married then?
No, I wasn't.
You weren't. Mm-hmm. You're a single girl.
Yeah.
Was this here in Nevada?
No.
No.
This was in Marin County in California.
Marin County.
Yes.
How long were you to the world out? I mean, just unconscious before you came back around to some form of consciousness physically?
3 days.
3 days in a virtual coma?
Yes.
Did you at any time during those 3 days actually flatline?
According to the medical records, 5 times.
5 times?
Yeah, they kept losing me. They kept giving me an hour to live and then another hour to live. I was very critical for a long time.
Wow.
It was really horrific.
Do you think that you know when you flatlined?
Well, I think probably, I don't have any conscious memory of it. As I said, for me, I came back to my body about 3 days later in time.
So you really think you were gone for that 3 days?
As far as I know, yes. You know, because there was, basically, I had the extended experience that I had, and then I was back in my body. But as far as time is concerned, 3 days had passed.
I've never really heard a story like yours before. This is
Well, it's not over, Archie.
I fully understand that. This is really something new to me.
And this isn't unusual.
It's not unusual, Doctor?
I believe it's unusual, but I do not believe that my experience is unique.
Obviously,
there's other people that have had experiences like mine. They just may not have ever told anybody about it.
Obviously, since that time, and so when did you begin talking about this?
Well, I spoke about it when I first came out and back to my body. I actually wasn't able to speak because I had a respirator in my face, but I started writing about it. And probably all the people in the hospital that I spoke to about it told me that I was just having intense hallucinations because of the fact that I was so incredibly injured.
Uh-huh.
And then I told kind of my immediate circle of friends at the time, but it was such a fantastic thing that I could really feel them drawing away from me because of it.
Sarah, hold on. We'll
sure.
come right back to you and to Dr. Jeff Long and Tricia McGill as well. I'm Art Bell.
And as the old saying goes, you ain't heard nothing yet. You've just got the groundwork. Sounds like a pretty bright, articulate girl, doesn't she? Well, she certainly was. I would classify what she had as a negative NDE, and as I said, you ain't heard nothing yet. Imagine this, though. Somebody only mildly religious, yet coming home from church volunteer work, thrown 60 feet, flatlining 5 times, not once but 5 times, and when you hear what she has gone through, what she actually went through, I mean, it was bad enough. The monster, the flames, and all the rest of it, bad enough, but that was only the beginning of the terror that lay ahead for Sarah. And I don't know how the religious community is going to accept hearing this, because they always believe, that, of course, that heaven, whether there's heaven, there's perhaps purgatory, depending on how you believe, and there's hell, and not a lot in between. Well, for Sarah, there was a whole lot in between. In a moment, when we come back, we'll do part two. And amazing as all of this so far has been, it's nothing compared to what's coming up. This just absolutely was the most profound case of NDE that I've ever heard. So stay where you are. We'll be right back with more. It's a Friday night, Saturday morning. Don't forget, tomorrow morning, if you get it, the first program ever done by me, anyway, with Father Malachi Martin. It was all about exorcism, and he, of course, was the exorcist. We'll be back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001. we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
All right, trust me when I tell you, stick with this story. More of Sarah coming up in a moment.
Coast to Coast AM sure sounds great in the middle of the night, but you know, you don't have to be nocturnal to enjoy this amazing show. The Coast Insider is your key to a normal life. For 15 cents a day, you can wake up refreshed knowing that last night's show is waiting for you with podcasting. As a member, you'll have access to our monthly live chat sessions with George Noory and special guests. The Coast Insiders Club is a must-have feature for all Coast to Coast AM listeners. Visit coasttocoastam.com to sign up today.
Get a new view of the world with Coast to Coast AM.
When do you see this entire picture unfolding?
It's unfolding right in front of us. The corporate construct runs our government. And most importantly, they keep us on the two-party system. As long as they can convince the American people that your choices between evildoers, the Democrats, or evildoers, the Republicans, they have absolute control of you. The biggest threat would be a genuine third party.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th. 2001.
All right, pay attention out there, everybody. Here comes more of the Sarah interview. Go ahead and roll it.
Back now to Dr. Jeff Long, Tricia McGill, and Sarah. Sarah, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, well, it takes a lot of guts, I think, especially publicly, to talk about this. So you are now left without the use of one arm. Have you otherwise recovered, or are there any other lingering physical problems?
Well, I have, in that arm, I have a condition that's called reflex sympathetic dystrophy, which means I'm in pain all the time. So that has really changed my life in a great deal of ways also, because when you experience pain, I think when you're that young, and I didn't really have any, you know, precedent in my life for acute injury or acute pain, so it really served to kind of change my perspective.
I'll bet.
Especially about human beings and suffering.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Back to that most awful moment.
Yes.
when out of the darkness, the light, a little pinprick of light, and then this horrid being with flames around it, a creature, I guess like a monster movie, coming at
yes.
you. At you.
At me. At an incredible rate of speed, too. Not slow. Very quick. It came toward me, and it was, you know, there was nowhere to go in this black. I didn't think there was to move, you know. I didn't think to run, because where was I going to go?
Yeah.
And so what I did was, this is where I really say that I had an awareness of my body, because I remember standing my ground, just sort of locking my knees and gritting my teeth and balling up my hands and going, okay, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. And I closed my eyes as this creature, you know, I could feel its hot breath on me at that point, right? And what it did was actually started to pass through my body. And I had an awareness of it passing actually very slowly through my body. And as it was passing through my body, it was laughing. And really gleefully laughing as it passed through me. And then it exited behind me with a pop. And then I started moving forward in the dark. And as I was rushing forward in the dark, there ended up being two more of these creatures that came at me. They were different colors from that one.
You can actually remember, in other words, you say you rushed forward,
yes.
as in physically running?
No, more as in like whooshing, like flying.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah. But then I started moving forward. And then as in this infinite black, there was no sort of idea that I was moving toward anything. There was just black.
Yes.
And then another one of these creatures came, but I knew what to do about this one, and I just closed my eyes, and it went through me. And then I kept going forward, and another one came, and these were both in different colors. They were still of the same aspect. They were still horrific looking, but they were just different colors than the original one. And so another one came through me, and it passed through me. And then I came to the entrance to a tunnel.
To a tunnel.
Mm-hmm. And the tunnel was made out of clouds, or seemed to be made out of clouds. It was like gray storm clouds, different colors of storm clouds.
Right.
And it was probably, it's hard to describe, you know, how large it was, because I didn't have any idea of perspective at that point. But what I can tell you is that it went up and then branched to the right and went around to at such a turn that I actually couldn't see where the right branch of the tunnel was going. And on the sides of the tunnel were kind of doorways in the clouds. And there were several different ones of them. There wasn't just one or two. They went up kind of at irregularly spaced intervals up the tunnels on both sides.
Sounds almost like a maze.
It wasn't really a maze. It was more like a viewing gallery. You know, if you were walking down a gallery, there were windows on both sides, but these happened to be doorways in the clouds.
I see.
So, at this point, I looked down at myself, and I no longer had my body. My body had become a little blue star, and I was just a little star of light, little blue star. And then as I noticed myself as a blue star, which seemed a perfectly normal thing for me to be in this context, I looked back up the tunnel, and I noticed that there were other little lights kind of moving around the tunnel up ahead of me. And it was far. It was a very vast distance. It wasn't as if I could just walk from one end of the tunnel very quickly if I had feet. But you know what I mean? It was far.
Yes.
And there were other little lights in the tunnel. Not a lot. I'd say maybe six. And some of them were blue like me, and others were kind of orange amber colored.
But you had sight, as we have sight now.
Yes, I was still seeing, and I was still aware, completely aware of myself. Do you know what I mean? I had a complete,
yes,
utter personality of me.
Yes. You said obviously without feet, now you're not walking. Were you able to intentionally produce motion? Could you move yourself in a direction?
Yes. Well, it happened that as I was gazing in this tunnel going, okay, now I'm here, and now I'm a blue star. Two little other blue stars appeared on either side of me, and they pushed me into the tunnel. So then I started moving, kind of floating into the tunnel. And that all seemed very normal at the time. I know it sounds fantastic, but it...
To say now, I know, but to you at that time, that,
yes,
it was just what was happening in normal. Yeah,
right.
I do understand.
Yes. So as I was floating along, I observed that some of the doorways in the clouds were open, while others seemed to have been shut up. In terms of, they didn't have like a door with a handle or anything like that. There was just kind of a darker area, and you couldn't see in.
Right.
And some of the doors had characters above them, like, you know, identifying what they were. But they weren't written or any characters that I'd ever seen. And sometimes that was very dim.
So you didn't really understand what those meant?
No, not at all. I just noticed, oh, isn't that interesting that there were sort of something other than the clouds above the doors.
Did they look like Egyptian characters or Chinese or something indecipherable?
They were fantastic. They could have been any combination of those, you know. Egypto-Phoenician, Chinese, science fiction, who knows, you know?
But definitely not door number 1, 2, and 3.
No, nothing that was recognizable to me at all. And that not every door had that either, only some doors.
Right. Wow.
So anyway, the first doorway that I looked into looked like hell. There were people shrieking and screaming, and there were naked human beings strewn about, you know, this horrid landscape with pools of bubbling excrement, and there's boulders, and
God,
animals were torturing people, and people were torturing each other, and, you know, there were creatures with pitchforks.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, erupting flame geysers, and it was the artist's classic depiction of hell.
Well, let me stop you right there. This,
sure,
is the most detailed description I've ever heard. There, I want you to hear something, Sarah.
Sure.
There was a story about Siberia, and they drilled, it was said, the world's deepest hole in Siberia. And the scientist who drilled the hole heard something, and they lowered a microphone as far as they could into the hole, and they made a recording. And I had a listener who sent me a copy of that recording, and I want to play that recording. It's only a few seconds long. Listen very carefully. Based on what you just described in the room that you saw, the room that seemed like hell, I wonder if it sounded like this. Sarah?
Oh, I just got goosebumps all over my body.
Me too.
Oh, that was just exactly like what it sounded like. That is amazing.
I don't know if I wanted to hear that, but when you said that, I couldn't resist. So you had that much sensory perception. You not only saw, but you heard.
Well, not only that, it got worse in that as I got close to this doorway, I was in kind of the center of the hall, and I looked in and saw this scene, and I was like, whoa. And then I went toward this door, I kind of floated toward it, and there was a sucking sensation near this door, kind of like a whirlpool. And I got actually sucked into the hell. And I was kind of catapulted above it, and I was floating above this scene, which is one reason why I can describe it in such great detail, is because I was in there for a while, listening to it, looking at it, just, again, horrified and awed by what I was witnessing, because the scenes of torment were so incredibly imaginative and different. There was every imaginable thing going on in there, you know. It was just, that you can think of in terms of torture and human misery, it was happening in there.
And you were sucked into it.
And I was sucked into it, yeah.
But you were above it, seeing.
I was above it, yes. I didn't have to. It wasn't as if anything was reaching for me. It was more as if I was observing it.
Good Lord. At this point, Sarah, at any point during all of this, didn't you begin to intellectualize your situation and ask yourself, where am I and what's happened to me? Or was it so natural that you just never went through that process?
Really, I never, while this whole thing was happening, I never questioned why it was happening. I questioned what was happening in terms of, you know, is this even possible at all? But I never questioned why it was happening. It just seemed as if it was something that I needed to see, you know?
Or maybe you were familiar with it.
Pardon me?
Could it be possible that, Sarah, you were familiar with it because you'd been there before?
That's very possible. I have no idea. All I know is that it had a strange fascination to me in its horrible way.
But you weren't yet really part of it.
No, I didn't have to be part of it. I was floating above it. And then there was a one point where, kind of like when you're watching a horror movie and you decide, all right, that's enough of this.
Yes.
And I moved toward, back. I said, all right, I'm leaving. And I went back toward the door, which was, the doorway out into the tunnel was visible from everywhere in this landscape. No matter where you looked, you could always see the door, and the door was always open.
Well,
and you could see the tunnel, you know, the cloud of tunnel, and in there it seemed very calm, especially considering the tumult that's all around.
Well, an obvious question is, though, those who were in that hell couldn't get to that door while you could.
I think my feeling about this is, because of what happened next, which was actually I left without any difficulty. And as I was passing through the door, my thought at that point was that the people that were in this scene could leave it at any time. They just weren't aware that they could, because they were so caught up in their own idea that they needed to suffer.
Or perhaps,
And you know, they say the door to hell is always open.
Yeah, perhaps they were keeping themselves there.
Yes, they were.
Have you seen the recent Robin Williams movie?
Yes, I did. On your recommendation, actually.
Really?
Yes.
It must have jolted you pretty hard.
It was very... It was interesting, but not exactly the same as my experience, only because he never had the idea of the tunnel, and the tunnel was so primary for mine.
Right.
But his idea of hell was tame for me.
Tame compared to what you saw?
Tame compared to what I saw, yes.
Well, all of this is confusing to the layman, because when you start talking about clouds and light and being a blue light, that begins to sound kind of spiritual on the good side, not...
I don't know if it was necessarily spiritual on the good side. I think, actually, it's more what form humans may take when they lose their body, or what form we perceive this particular experience in. I don't know, you know? This is...
Well, in What Dreams May Come and some other motion pictures that have been produced, there is the concept that people essentially sentence themselves to hell.
Yes, and that's what I think, too. I think so, definitely, from the experience that I had, that those people had sentenced themselves.
All right,
that's what I've gotten from all of my research also, Art.
Yeah.
So you left there on your own. You got out.
I felt really lucky, too, because I was afraid that I wasn't going to be able to get out because that sucking sensation had been so strong coming in. And, you know, even as I was leaving, I could sort of feel the energy kind of pouring back in. Sort of, if anything else unwary kind of came along, it was also going to get sucked in.
Huh.
You know? So it was pretty interesting in that respect. And then I was back in the tunnel.
Back in the tunnel of clouds and doors.
Right, tunnel of clouds and doors.
Okay.
So I decided I was going to keep going up the tunnel. And so the next world that I looked into, which was, I don't remember if it was exactly the one right next to the hell, but the next door that I looked in that I have a conscious memory of was also a kind of hell. It was a kind of a completely yellow landscape that was flat. And there were people, and they were just walking. And they had their heads down, and they were totally depressed and totally self-absorbed in this utter miserable state of mind. And they walked past each other, and they walked next to each other, and they were totally oblivious that anybody else was there. And that was all that was happening, except there was a sun in the sky that would cast incredibly long shadows of these people across the landscape. And again, there was this sense here... Again, of another kind of misery. It wasn't as graphic.
Not as torturous.
No, but it was, on certain levels, it was worse. Because these people were completely isolated and alone. And in their isolation and in their loneliness, they were utterly lost and miserable.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it was, that's what I thought, too. When I looked in that world, I was like, oh, my God.
All right. So
that one I didn't have to go into, though. That one I managed to... There was no sucking sensation at that door. I just looked at it.
You looked at it and
said, wow.
Enough of this place. Mm-hmm. All right. Hold on, Sarah, and hold on. Dr. Jeff Long and Tricia McGill. I'm Art Bell, and I don't think I've ever heard as graphic a description of a trip to a place of this kind. Ever. This is somebody who flatlined 5 times, was thrown 60 feet by an automobile.
So there is part two. Now, as the old saying again goes, you ain't heard nothing yet. I mean, this story just kept going and going and going. And obviously, this was written actually for her as she related it. A number of people have asked, well, how was it written? Well, it was written for her and or written by her when she was able to finally write. And so all of this is a very fresh recollection that you're hearing. Why would a church volunteer, a young lady without too many marks on the negative side, face something like she is obviously facing? And as I said, you just haven't heard it all yet by a long shot. I don't know, but it profoundly affected me because as I listened to her, and I like to think of myself as a pretty good judge of voices and people, it was obvious to me that she was absolutely telling the truth as she precisely recalled it. Don't you have that impression? not just telling a story to be on the radio at all, nothing like it. In fact, we had to drag her to the radio to get her to do this. But once she got into it, it should be obvious to anybody listening that this was an actual, true experience that this young lady had. And the question remains, why? And is that really what awaits all of us? But, we're not done yet. Stay right where you are. The best part lies directly ahead.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
You haven't heard it all yet. More of Sarah coming right up. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Back now to Dr. Jeff Long, Tricia McGill, and Sarah. Sarah, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Well, it takes a lot of guts, I think, especially publicly, to talk about this. I've never heard anything as detailed as this in my life from somebody like you, ever.
Well, it really, absolutely, utterly changed my life forever, and it has been the pivotal event in my existence ever since then. And one of the reasons why I want to communicate it is so that I can move forward with this and join with other people in sort of celebrating this event, so that it no longer is something that is, you know, just my own. And, you know, it's just very, it takes a lot of energy, and especially with something like this where you don't have any precedent in your existence for such a thing. How do you fit that back into an ordinary reality when you return to it?
I don't know. I don't know either.
I haven't done a very good job with that.
All right. Well, let's finish it. You came out of this second room where people were on a yellow floor, sort of.
Yes.
In just sort of a horribly depressed state, and you sort of looked in that one and didn't spend much time, said, let's
get out
of here.
I just felt a great deal of compassion for these people again, because it seemed again like they were choosing this state.
Yeah.
Like they didn't have any idea that this was not what they had to be at all. But unfortunately, they didn't have any idea of that. All they knew is that this is what it was. Mm-hmm. And just to see all these different human beings just passing each other by like ships in the night, and having no idea that anybody else was there,
mm-hmm,
was just so isolating and lonely.
Were, other than that, those creatures, which more than noticed you, came after you, did anybody in any one of these rooms, were they aware you were there, do you think?
No, it was more like looking in an aquarium, kind of like that idea.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Because in both cases, the tunnel was kind of above these landscapes. So it was very much a kind of a looking down on them.
I've got you.
Okay.
Then what?
Well, then I decided to keep continuing up the tunnel. And the next world that made any sort of impression on me was kind of a very different one in the aspect of, it was the most beautiful thing that I'd ever seen. And in that way, the Robin Williams film touched me very deeply because the kind of color that he had there and the beautiful waterfalls and bridges and fountains, and it was sparkling and iridescent and welcoming, and I could hear the sounds of birds and all this other thing going on in there, and it was like, oh boy, well, I definitely want to go in there.
By the way, folks, it's called What Dreams May Come.
Yes, it was wonderful. But this world, later, in fact, several years later, after I had this experience, I saw the paintings of an artist named Gilbert Williams, and this world was very much like his paintings, if you're familiar with his work at all.
I'm not.
Okay. But anyway, it was luminescent. Everything was lit from within and sparkling and living and gorgeous. And it was very interesting because as I went toward this world, of course I wanted to go in there. I was like, oh, yeah. as I started to pass through the doorway, it was as if my little star nose got stuck against a piece of plastic wrap, and I couldn't go any further in to this world.
Oh.
And a voice, kind of almost as if I touched a doorbell, a voice said, you do not have the information to enter this world. And I was terribly disappointed, but I thought, okay, well, what can I do? You know, I can't go any further. In fact, I remember I kind of tried to push through this transparent covering over this world.
Right.
But it didn't work. I didn't go in.
You don't have the information
to enter this world, yes. And I thought, well, okay. And I thought to myself, well, I'm certainly going to get the information wherever I, somehow I will get the information to enter that world. But that was a big disappointment for me.
Right.
So at that point, I was kind of near the, very much near the end of the tunnel in terms of where it branched to the right.
Okay.
And so I, as in my little star self, I turned around, and there, in this right branching, was a big yellow and white light that was very bright and intense and beautiful and wonderful. So I decided, okay, well, may as well go into the light. So I went into the light, and I'm in the light, and I feel this incredible feeling of joy and happiness and bliss, and I notice that that's the only thing that I can feel. There's nothing else going on there but joy and happiness and bliss and celestial, you know, harmony, and it was overwhelming. And I said to the light, I said, I'm here. And the light said, in this kind of big voice, it said, great, you know.
Great.
Then, well, yeah, it said great, you know. And then I kind of gave myself up to the light. I merged with it. I myself became nothing but eternal joy and bliss and happiness. And I kind of floated in this state for quite some time. And in this state, I lost my fear of death. And I learned a lot of things that are all kind of personal truths for me about myself in this state of joy and bliss. And this lasted for an unknown period of time. And then...
Again, let me ask you, were you... In that state, I've experienced, Sarah, something like that not an NDE, but an out-of-body experience I had,
yes,
just instantaneously. So I know just a little tiny bit about it.
Yes.
Could you think, could you intellectualize, obviously something was going on because you were recognizing these things about yourself, so...
Yes.
So you had some sort of awareness.
Yes, it was definitely a learning state and a healing state at the same time. But I was aware of myself. Again, I never lost my awareness of who I was, ever.
Okay.
No matter what was happening, even in the state of utter joy and bliss. I was in utter joy and bliss, and yet the joy and bliss was also outside me and happening around me.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point, to be perfectly honest with you, it got kind of dull. And so I decided that I was going to leave this place of joy and bliss. And so I said to the light, I said, I'm leaving. And the light said, great. And I thought, okay.
You know, so far I'm right with you because
yeah,
the feeling of eternal joy and bliss,
yes,
would, after a while, I suppose, sort of...
And I guess that sounds kind of sacrilegious.
It does, but it'd be almost boring. In other words, you'd tire of it.
I did. I tired of it because, in certain levels, it was exhausting because it was never-ending.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing but that. There was no other emotion expressed. It was always joy and bliss.
So the line said,
very wonderful.
The line said, great.
Yeah. So, and I had an idea that it doesn't matter on a personal level, you know. It didn't matter if I was there or if I wasn't there. This light was always going to be in eternal joy and bliss.
You were welcome to come, welcome to go.
Exactly. And so that was just wonderful. So, and then, you know, and I remember thinking, well, okay, well, all right, well, I'm leaving now. And I kind of went rather quickly back down the tunnel, and I paused. This is kind of, now we're kind of near the end of this here.
Okay.
This is my last little experience. But there was a doorway near the end of the tunnel that was actually near the entrance where I came in. And this doorway looked out onto space. And there were galaxies and stars and planets, and it was utterly silent and utterly serene, and seemed, you know, if you could go out and float on that forever and be kind of numbly happy pretty much eternally. And there's also a sense of adventure too, though, like if you went out there you'd become like a voyager in the galaxy,
right?
And I kind of hovered on this doorway. And another little being came up and started talking to me about what my options were at this point. And through the opening of the doorway, I could hear voices that were saying, come back, Sarah. You know, what about Zane, which is my son's name? And I got very annoyed with them because I thought, why are they bothering me about my son? Of course, I'm aware that I'm going to be returning to my son and my body. But I could hear them kind of clamoring through the doorway. And so I spoke with this little other being at this doorway, and we were talking, and suddenly it was kind of like the doorbell with the other world, where a voice said, if you pass through this door, you can't come back. And I thought, okay, well, I really don't want to go out there right now. And so I plopped myself back through the door where I came, and suddenly I was back in my body, and I was in a really brightly lit hospital bed, and there were all these tubes sticking into me, and I had a respirator in my face, and my body was humming with power. It was just full of electricity, but I couldn't move it at all because at that point I was pretty much completely paralyzed. And yet also, you know, I was full of joy. I had no fear of death. I had all this wonderful truth about myself. And I couldn't move, and I couldn't communicate it to anyone at all.
You couldn't even write then?
Oh, no, and I actually, at that point, it seemed like being in the hospital bed and being in my body and being so heavy was the abnormal part, do you know?
Yes, I
That was a jolt, and I really didn't want to be there for a moment. But then I settled into the fact that, oh, well, here I was. And then as the feeling of electricity faded, then I got the wonderful feeling of pain. So I knew I was back in my body because it hurt. And it's understandable considering the extent of my injury.
How long was it before you were able to either write or talk?
Talking took a month.
A month?
Because I was on the respirator for almost that whole month. Because my lungs had really been pretty badly damaged.
When you could talk, you began to communicate, I'm sure, didn't you? What happened to you?
I did, and the health practitioners who were wonderful in terms of saving my life were very, they were upset by what I was saying. They didn't really, they told me basically that the experience that I had was a result of the hallucinations from the fact that I'd been so badly hurt and that none of what I had experienced was real.
They told you that?
Yes. And I think that they were doing the best that they could in terms of the context of what they knew. You know, this is a fantastic occurrence. They had a job to do, which was to keep me alive, and that's more what they were concentrating on, other than trying to, you know, fit what happened to me into the context of something that they knew, since it was something outside what they knew. I don't really think they knew what to do with it.
There would be no way for you to correlate the events that you went through to the five times that you flatlined, would there? In other words, there would be...
In terms of time?
Or even synchronicity. In other words, you can't put together in your mind...
No, like if each time I flatlined, I might have been in one of those different worlds or something like that.
Sure.
It would be it'd be wonderful to say that happened.
But you don't know
that
to be true.
I can't honestly say that. All I can honestly say is that I know they lost me, and I know that this experience was obviously extended over a long period of time. Because 3 days had passed before I returned to my body. And by then my parents were there, and I don't remember actually if I communicated much to them at all about it. I know I told my close circle of friends, but again, I met with a great deal of kind of skepticism, and again, everyone was kind of humoring me because I was so injured. So I really shut up about it, and I shut up about it really until I came here to Las Vegas and found the little advertisement that Trish had put in one of the papers saying that she had a support group that she was creating for people with near-death experience, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go, and I'm going to talk to other people who've had this experience, and then I'm not going to feel so alone and frightened and strange.
Have you met in the group or anywhere else anybody who had the experience you had?
I haven't met anybody who's had the same experience that I've had, but I've met other people who have had the same experience in terms of their lives have been transformed in the same way that mine was by the experience that they had.
And how is your life now different?
Well, the biggest thing, I think, the biggest thing that I learned from that is that I lost my fear of death. I lost any fear that I have of the fact that I will lose, upon death, my awareness of who I am.
Yeah. You know, Danyon...
That is such a comfort.
Danyon of Brinkley tells me the same thing all the time.
And
I mean, he just says, I'm not afraid.
I'm not. No, it's not that I necessarily want to go quickly into that experience again,
right,
okay?
Right.
But the point is, when it comes, I have an acceptance of it that I wish I could communicate to other people, because it is such a joy. Because nothing in my ordinary life now, no matter how hard it gets, can really shake my idea of who I am. And I know that even death will not dissolve my awareness of who I am. And I think that is one of the biggest things that people worry about when they die. They feel like they're going to disintegrate and disappear.
Cease to exist.
And that doesn't happen. I don't believe it happens at all. I think actually you have wonderful, that death is a wonderful adventure, if you'll let it be. You know, I think that was one of the things about my experience, is that death can also have some horrific aspects to it, if that's your choice. But there's certainly many other avenues of death to explore.
Sarah,
yes.
Why do you think that the horrific aspects of that were your choice?
In my case?
Yes.
I think that they represented fear that I had of dying. Because I did have a great fear of dying. I was very kind of morbid as a child. I liked horror movies and ghost stories and all that stuff. And I loved scaring myself. But I was really very afraid of death. And also really very ignorant of death. I really knew nothing about it. No one in my immediate circle of family had really died where I actually had a good experience of death. You know, I was ignorant of death and I was afraid of death. And I think my horrific aspects of my near-death experience represented those things in myself.
Danyon Brinkley is now compelled to go to hospices and to help people die.
Yes, that was my first thing too. The only reason why it never happened was because I was afraid that I would go and present myself to medical practitioners and they would turn me away as a lunatic.
Well, we've got a couple that didn't do that here on the phone. Sarah, I don't know how to thank you. I have never heard a story ever like yours, and it was remarkable.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Art. It's been wonderful to share it. I hope that other people will come forward and share their experiences, too.
Maybe
so
now
we can learn more.
Yeah, maybe now they will, Sarah.
Okay, wonderful.
Thank you, and good night.
There you have it. There was the NDE of Sarah. so remarkable that I really thought that all of you should hear it either again or, I know in many, many cases, for the first time. We're going in open lines, and you're more than welcome to comment on what you just heard, how you interpret what you just heard, anything you like. In the meantime, I think we're going to start down a slightly different road. I just got this, and I'm going to read it to you as is. Art, I'm in the health insurance business in a central California town of Kern County. One of my 69-year-old clients died. Now, maybe somebody who has more medical knowledge than I can figure out the real cause of death, what it was. Here were the symptoms. Sore elbow. Then it began swelling. No open wound. He would fall from time to time for no apparent reason. First diagnosed as a bursitis. Then an orthopedic doctor said he had a staph infection in the elbow, drained some fluid from the elbow, then hospitalized him as having a staph infection and quarantined him. He was put on high doses of antibiotic intravenous drip. His condition worsened. His eyesight and ability to talk then went. They said it attacked his brain. Then pneumonia set in. He then went into a coma. He was dead within 1.5 weeks. Do these sound like the symptoms of mad cow to you? From complaint to dead in 1.5 weeks with those symptoms. You tell me, I'm certainly not a doctor, but I thought when I read this that I should read it to you, and I don't know why. One of the questions that somebody wants me to ask, and I think I rather will tonight, is all of this that's happening to us right now, the environment, the diseases that are emerging and spreading like wildfire, all of this, just a simple question, why is all of this craziness happening? Again, why is all of this craziness happening? Do you have any answer for that? From the kids who are killing kids? You name it. I can't figure it out.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
Good morning. Well, I wanted you to hear that. Now you've heard it, and I'd welcome your comments on it or anything else you want to talk about. If you want to just take a shot at why is all this craziness happening, and I'm tired of documenting it. Everybody knows what it is going on out there right now, and you know it's wrong. In every sector, it's sort of everything's off kilter and wrong and headed in the wrong direction. You can feel it. And so there is an answer to what is going on. Maybe one of you has it. I certainly don't. I'm just an observer watching it race along. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
Now, we're going to be either completely in open lines for the balance of the show, or if I get in the mood, we're going to play a little truth or trash. I know a lot of you have never, you have no idea what truth or trash is. It's when I find somebody who has a totally, totally fantastic story, and who's willing to tell it. You can lie your tail end off if you want to. I don't care how fantastic the story is. Although, I don't want paranormal stories, and I don't want ghost stories. Well, for sure I don't want ghost stories, because you can't judge those very well, you know? But what I want is fantastic stories. Any category, really. And then after you've told your story, I put you on hold, and five people get to vote on what they think of your story. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Truth or trash, in other words. So maybe we'll do a little bit of that. I had that on the headline for tonight, but I really, really wanted to replay that incredible story, and that'll be with you. If you listened to the whole thing tonight, it's going to be with you for a while. On the international line, you are on the air, top of the morning. Hello.
Hi, Art.
Hi, where are you, sir?
I'm in Darmstadt, Germany.
Ah, welcome.
My name's Harry.
Hi, Harry.
I've only been on your show once before, and I really enjoyed the last segment that you did with this lady.
Yes.
Because it confirms so much of what I know to be true, and that is that we are frequency or vibrational beings, and we set our own reality about what we believe. And she said so much of this, that things go by what we believe.
Well, she got to see some areas that I found really troubling. I mean, almost every other NDE that you hear about, it's warm and fuzzy and great. But my God, we were hearing about people in one room or area or world, if you want to look at it that way, who were obviously in hell. Another room where people might as well have been in hell.
One thing she said, though, that she could leave whenever she wanted, that it was open. It was all by what she believed.
That's right. But remember now, she was coming back. If there's a God, if there's a greater power, and I'm sure there is, that had already been predetermined. So for some reason, she was allowed to look at things that others have not seen.
Oh, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that 100%. But another thing I heard coming from her Christian background and their beliefs in this eternal hell, I look at it as a way to give Christians or people that are not Christians who just can't measure up, so to speak, a way to see that they're not going to be tormented forever.
Well,
that's what I feel.
Yeah, you can look at it any way you want. It was she was pretty credible, wasn't she?
Yes, absolutely. Hey, Art, can I take a stab at what's going on, just real quick?
Yeah, have at it. Be my guest.
What's going on right now is we are living in an electromagnetic universe, okay? We are electromagnetic beings.
Yes.
We set vibrational frequencies.
Yes.
And right now our sun is going through a radiation belt of some type, an energy thing, because we're coming to the beginning of a cycle where our universe, our galaxy travels around the universe, and it's almost at the start point. It's an exciting time, but the thing is, I study ancient things, you know, such as the Greeks, the Egyptians, and what it is we no longer have connection with the electronics lining up the pyramids and the harmonic frequencies, and in this shift that's going to happen, a lot of destruction is going to happen. But thanks God to people like you, Art, and others who are getting information out, people are starting to understand and see that there's a way of being safe, and that is through letting their feelings guide them.
Oh, you're in Europe. You're where this whole mad cow scare is probably right now the scariest. How's it affecting people over there?
Well, we have Walmarts over here. If you go into Walmarts and other stores, there's vegetarian products there now. our health food stores are steaming with people. They're not going buying in the meat as they did before. And Well, I'm not really worried about mad cow disease at all for me because I am a vegetarian.
Well, naturally, don't worry.
One of the ancient things that I read about, and this is coming from a philosopher, he said, as long as we cause pain and murder in the world, we will never know peace and joy. And I think it's a way of the animals actually revolting against us and saying, okay, enough's enough.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You take care, my friend, all the way from Germany. So as long as we, that's an interesting perspective, isn't it? As long as we continue to project negativism in the form of emotions and violence, and there's a lot of that going on around the world right now, isn't there? Look at what's going on in the Middle East. Look at what's going on right here on Main Street. As long as we continue to project that, we will push ahead the events that are apparently inevitable. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm trying to think of a story here.
A story?
Yeah.
You're supposed to have thought of that before you called.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Wild card line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, my name is Claudia. I'm calling from South Lake Tahoe.
Hello, Claudia.
Hi, and I'd like to tell a story that happened. Happened about 10 years ago, and I was living in Australia, and every single night I would have these dreams, and it was of these people. They looked like, I wouldn't say aliens, but they weren't like earthly either, but they had brown robes on, and every night they came in my dreams for a full week. And every night they were giving me all this information. It was like scientific. I mean, it's just mind-boggling information, like I was going to Harvard. By the time I was done, I said, I had enough. I can't take any more of this information. I sat down, and I did these 10 drawings. And I took the drawings after I was done. I couldn't believe that I did these. They were like poster-sized, black and white.
What were they drawings of?
One was like of the Sphinx and this man opening it up, the Sphinx looking inside it.
Really?
Another one would be, was alien ships.
Really?
Yeah, it was just tons and tons of, so I had drawn 12 poster size, and everyone that saw it was so shocked. They said, you got to show these to somebody, you know. So I had a friend when I was in Australia who knew the art professor of Sydney University, and I took him there, and I said, well, what do you think? What is this? You know, because I had never drew anything. I mean, not even stick people. And he had said...
That's
that
what I draw, stick people.
He had said that not even a draftsman could have drawn these as perfect. But anyway, all the material in it, I mean, it is shocking to see. But anyway, he said that you broke every rule and it worked. And he goes, I don't know how you did it. And I told him.
Meaning what? You broke every rule?
Oh, when they teach you how to do things in art, you know, they teach you a specific way.
Yes, okay. I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah, and
artistically.
But I had no art training. And he was like, he just couldn't believe it. But anyway, so what I was wondering is, I've always thought about this, if a lot of people out there have the same experience. You know, did a lot of drawing, and they don't know where it came from.
You didn't happen to draw an engine or a drive system for a craft, did you?
Yes.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Oh. Well, this gets more interesting by the moment. All right.
Another thing.
Wait. What have you done with these drawings?
I held on to them because I didn't know what to do.
So you still have them?
Actually, I had written one time a letter to Whitney Stryper, but I didn't get a response.
All right. Well, you're talking to me right now. So I'm asking you, you have the drawing?
Yes.
Would you like people to see these drawings?
Yes. Yes.
You would?
Yes, definitely.
Do you have a way to scan these drawings?
No, I don't.
How big are they?
They're poster size, like, say 18 by 26 or something. You know, pretty small. I could send them to you, like, in a tube.
I don't want that responsibility. here's what I would like, though. Let's see if it might be possible for you to go to a photographic shop where they could reduce them and keep them in scale and still have plenty of high resolution.
Oh, Okay.
And then they could be sent to me, either in the reduced form, the copies, which would be ideal, really, or scanned and sent to me by computer, and we could get them on the website, because I would sure love to see them.
Oh, okay, great.
How about
it? Do that. So who do I send it to?
All right. Do you have a pencil and paper?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You ready to copy?
Right.
Okay, that would be me, Art Bell.
Okay.
P.O. Box 4755. In Pahrump, that's P as in Paul, A-H-R-U-M-P.
Okay.
Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And the zip code is 89041.
Okay, great.
All right?
Okay, I'll do that.
Bless your heart. Thank you and take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, what do you think about that? Huh. She couldn't even draw stick people and yet proclaimed to be a great art, great work, incredible work, beyond her ability. And it came from 5 days of dreams. And she drove, she drew a drive system and an alien craft. Now that's got to be worth a look, don't you think? So if she can get those reduced and get them to me, I will get them to you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello.
Hi.
Turn your radio off right away.
It's off now.
Okay.
How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I was wondering, I was thinking about the rods, and you had mentioned something else connected to out-of-bodies. What if rods are people having out-of-body experiences, and they're flying around as rods?
Yeah, that was suggested to me by somebody else. I can't remember who.
Ah, shucks.
It could be those are released souls flitting about. But I don't know. I kind of hope that's not it, because I don't want to think of that as, what I'm going to be when I pass to the other side. But then again, I don't want Sarah's trip either.
It might be fun to fly around like that.
Well, yes, flying I like, but I'd like to be more than a rod.
Well, maybe that's just the way we see them in the third dimension.
Well, you could be absolutely correct. And it could be that the dimensions are beginning to part and that we'll all be seeing each other pretty soon.
I hope so. That'll be fun.
Maybe.
Have a good night.
Good night. All right, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. During the news, at the top of the hour, I'm going to be scouring my lines, and I have many phone lines here, for one of you that has a really good story. Now, remember, your story need not be the truth. It can be a complete and total fabrication. I don't care. Or it can be the stranger-than-truth story, stranger-than-fiction story, rather. So incredible that you're probably going to trip up the people saying it's truth or trash. This is how we play this game. But above all, it's got to be a really good story. Generally, not of the paranormal, not of ghosts, because those things are very difficult to judge. These are life stories, things that have happened to you that are absolutely incredible. And I know that a lot of incredible things have happened to you all, right? So I will scour the lines for such a story during the break. And if I get one, when we come back, we will play at least a small edition of Truth or Trash. And if we have fun, we'll play more. We'll see. We'll see. That'll be at the top of the hour. So if you have such a story, be prepared to call in at the top of the hour. I'll have 5 minutes to find you. In the meantime, West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yes, Art.
Hello.
Pleased to meet you. Boy, I've been listening to you for quite a while. Back when you were under 40 affiliates, I was listening in Kogo back in 90-whatever-4.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. After hearing myself do the interview with Sarah, I don't sound any different.
No, you don't.
I don't.
Just as interesting, though. See, I've got a truth or trash story for you.
Oh, you do?
Yes, I do.
Well, now, you heard me say that I would be scouring the lines for 5 minutes to find a really good one. So, are you telling me you've got a really good one?
I think I do.
All right, let's hear it.
All right.
If it's not good, if it's not a good one, I will not submit it to the jury.
All right.
All right.
This happened about three and a half years ago. Down my basement, light needed to be fixed. Turned out I didn't turn the master switch off. I thought I cut the basement part of the circuit breaker off.
Right.
Anyhow, I had my mother down there. She was shining a flashlight up at the light while I was taking a screwdriver to the light socket.
Oh, now, wait a minute. A screwdriver to the light socket?
Yes. Just what you don't want to do.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, anyhow, I stuck the screwdriver up there, and the first thing that happened was a big old bolt of electricity shot through that screwdriver.
Yes.
And down my arm, my left arm, actually.
Yes.
And felt it all the way down my left body. And
you bet.
Anyhow, I didn't think much of it. I did at the time, but there's a big old gouge out of the screwdriver. I didn't notice this. I didn't really correlate this till a few days later, but whenever I was at the ATM machine, and I'm right-handed, and at the time I had a bag in my right hand, so I was using my left hand to punch in my PIN number.
Right.
And nothing was coming out. Or actually, it kept coming back reject.
Right.
So I didn't think much of it, and I put my bag down from my right hand, used my right hand, and of course everything worked out all fine. Then that same day, I had a radio, and it was not plugged in, there's no batteries in it, and I happened to lift it up with my left hand, and the radio went on. And I thought it was sort of odd. I thought there's batteries in there, but it felt too light because it takes 4D batteries in there, so it's, usually you can tell the difference in light. Put it down,
right.
The radio goes off. Lift it back up, radio goes on.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was real odd. Anyhow, I once showed, you know, my brothers and sisters, you know, what was happening.
Look at me, I'm an electrical demon.
Could be, could
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
Well, I live in Las Vegas now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Do you gamble?
So I tried my hand at the slots.
Yes? Yes?
Well, I hate to say, but I was using my left hand trying to get something going, but oddly enough, I can't win a thing with my left hand. You know, 10, 15, 20 pulls, it doesn't matter. I can't win at all. I use my right hand, you know, and I pick up a few cherries there and here and there, but left hand cannot win.
So you're telling me that you have destroyed the luck of your left hand?
Evidently, it has something flowing in me that I can't control.
You've actually destroyed the luck of your left hand. Is that all right, hold it for a minute. Let's see if this works. East of the Rockies, do you think that story was truth or trash?
It could be true, but I was calling up.
No. Truth or trash?
That was probably trash.
Trash. All right, well, I'll put you down for trash. All right, wildcard line, tell me, was that truth or trash?
I'd say that was truth.
Truth, that's one of each, all right? First-time caller line, was that truth or trash?
Oh, I'd say it was trash.
Absolute trash, all right. East of the Rockies, do you think that story was truth or trash?
Yes, sir, I'm going to go ahead and tell you it's going to be true due to the fact that... We have our magnetic base of our anatomy.
All right. That's all I can take. Truth or trash? What do you think, Wild Card? Hi there.
Hi. Wow.
All right. Don't wow me.
Okay, I've got the answers for you, Arbel.
Well, just give me a truth or trash answer.
Okay. Oh, no.
Yes.
More than that.
No, but I don't have more time. So was that story truth or trash? Your vote.
It was trash.
It was trash. Oh, absolute trash. All right. Thank you very much. All right. Caller, are you still there?
Yes.
They said it's trash.
Well, the bolt of electricity, too, the screwdriver, too, but everything else is trash.
They nailed you, caller.
Yeah, I'm poor K-Don, KDWN, here in Las Vegas.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, good night.
You are listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001. I know I could cry. I just can't find the answer. Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
All right, what the hell? Let's play Truth or Trash for a while, shall we? All right, I'm going to be hunting for stories, and I've got a pretty good one coming up. And as long as I get good stories, we will continue. As a matter of fact, let's just light it off right now, shall we? This should be interesting. On my wild card line, who have I got? Do you want to give your name, or do you want to give your first name or not?
No.
You don't want to give your first name?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Let's hear your story.
Well, I work for a company that does a little bit of everything, so to speak, but I'm what's in the industry referred to as an NTV pilot. That would be a non-terrestrial vehicle.
You pilot UFOs?
Yes, sir, and they're not actually UFOs because we've got quite a deal of information accumulated over the years on these vehicles.
What do you mean, we, Tonto? I mean, are you part of our government in some way?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you work at an area near me?
Approximately 93 miles, bearing probably...
Then let's just spit it out. You work at Area 51.
Yes, that's what it's commonly referred to.
Why have you decided to speak out? I mean, normally people who work at Area 51 are in fear of their family, their finances, and their own neck if they speak out.
That's basically true, but lest one have a way to, shall we say, remove oneself from the area?
In other words, you're about to be on the run, is what you're telling us.
Oh, no, not unless this is actually found out. But I definitely have a way out of it.
Unless it's found out, you're on national radio right now.
No, that's okay.
Well, it might be and it might not be. So you pilot extraterrestrial craft of what type? Tell us about them. Or anything you want about it, or anything you're willing to tell us.
Well, in simple terms, they're, as you refer, gravity-defying. Actually, they're a gravity nullification device.
Okay.
They accelerate at unbelievable speeds when compared to aircraft that are of aerodynamic type.
Terrestrial design.
Well.
In other words, normal terrestrial design aircraft.
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Be in the kind of position that you are in, you certainly would have to have a background, I would think, as a test pilot or some sort of background like that.
Yes, sir.
That is accurate?
Yes.
Is there anything else you want to say about all of this before you are judged by our fellow listeners here?
Well, I would say that in a few days, a lot of things are going to be made clear to the public due to the fact that, say, several inducements have been put into several craft that are also flying.
What do you mean, inducements?
Anomalies that will be brought forth in their programming.
What? You mean to say that you have, in effect, or somebody has, in effect, sabotaged some of these extraterrestrial craft that the government is testing? Is that what I just heard?
Not the test vehicles.
What do you mean, not the test vehicles?
When the one that... I better watch there. When the one that has the anomalies in it...
Yes.
...makes its landing...
Yes.
...all that's inside will become clear to the American and world public.
And this is going to happen within a matter of days?
I would say within 23 hours, actually.
23 hours?
Yes, and I would say that over... Eventually, it will make the news. Initially, it'll be an extreme shock to the public due to the fact of the area that it lands in. I would say the hush will come extremely
abruptly.
Do
you know where it's going to land? You obviously do, don't you?
Yes.
Do you want to tell us?
I would say that the fire would come from the west.
All right. You stay right there on the line for a minute, all right? Because I'm going to have to come back to you and find out if indeed you're telling us the truth or whether that's utter trash. Let's see what you all have to say about the story you just heard. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Do you think that was possibly the truth, or do you think it was utter trash?
I think it was the truth.
You think it was the truth, really?
Sure.
Pretty fantastic story, but you're going for it, huh?
Yeah.
All right, there's one for the truth. Boy, I'll tell you, it never ceases. I'm always surprised. West of the Rockies, do you think that was the truth, or do you think we were all fed a bunch of trash there?
Oh, I think we were fed a huge line of trash.
Huge amount of trash.
But I need you to keep me on the line. I'm the telephone number girl, sorry.
Hold on.
Thank you.
Let's see. Actually, I can't do that. We'll just have to go for the next story. First time caller line, do you think that was the truth or trash?
Trash.
Uh-oh. Leaning over in the trash direction here. All right. We take a total of 5 votes on these things, which, you know, it's not a big sample. East of the Rockies, do you think that had the ring of truth or the dull thud of trash?
Oh, shoot. I had a story, but it's trash.
Trash, huh?
Yeah, the story I have is really cool compared to that.
Well, all right. How could it be really cool compared to that? Just for that, I will put you on hold. I'll try it. Anyway, West of the Rockies, do you think that story was truth or trash?
I think it was trash.
Trash. That's 1, 2, 3, 4 trashes and 1 truth. And I am sorry, caller. They say it was trash. You know. He couldn't stand that much rejection. He didn't even stick around to tell us if it was truth or trash. Well, I guess humiliation does that to you. Let's take a quick break. Come back and see what else awaits us.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
All right, here we go. Here's the young lady who said she had a story that was even better than that one. That one was pretty good. Now, he did either hang up at the end in humiliation, having received 4 trash votes, or there was the sound of strangulation just before I went to the line, and you just heard it, you know, as they killed him. It's hard to say which. Personally, I think he hung up. All right, where are you and who are you?
This is Gabriel from Fowler, Ohio.
Okay.
And we had a neighbor survive having his head cut off by a chainsaw. Believe it or not, yeah. What had happened, this gentleman was...
No, yes. Nobody can survive having their head cut off.
Well, he was an eccentric type of West Virginian. I met the man long, long time ago when I was a kid. And he was out back cutting wood with his chainsaw.
Yes.
Hit a knot in the log. The same chainsaw jumped back on him and cut him really bad across the neck. And I don't know. this guy ended up walking from his house to the fire station, which was like less than a mile away. And the paramedics just saw the mess. And assisted him, ran him to the hospital, and survived.
Wait a minute. Hold it. When you say he cut his head off,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't like the entire head. If you cut through the spinal cord, that's it, baby.
Well, I don't know if there's degrees of decapitation or what, but
well,
it was considered a decapitation.
No. There are degrees of decapitation. Believe me, there really are. There are degrees, and if it's 100 degrees, then, 100%, then I don't think you do survive that. But you're saying that it was a degree of decapitation at the very least, and they got him there fast enough, and he actually survived.
Yes.
His head cut off.
Yes. And
it's recorded. And this man, you're claiming, is alive today?
Well, no. What happened is later on, like 2 years later, he shot his wife who ran across the street and hid into a neighbor's closet waiting for authorities to come and died bleeding to death. And then he turned around and turned the gun on himself.
So, oh, my God. After that, he kills
yeah,
himself?
It's kind of like watching a dog get hit by a truck and then surviving, get hit by a smaller thing and then surviving it or dying. You
yeah.
Know?
Oh, it's absolutely like that, yes. All right. Well, are you prepared to be judged on that story?
Of course.
And do you promise to not hang up when I come back, even if you've been trashed?
Most definitely, my dear sir.
All right, then, hold on. All right, we are now going to go for judgment on this story. Man hits not with chainsaw, which backfires, and to some degree decapitates him, and yet he survives to kill, and then himself. Pretty incredible story, no matter how you rack it up. All right, here we go. West of the Rockies, do you declare that story to be truth or trash?
Well, I know numerous other conditions exactly like that that are truth because I used to run an ambulance for 15 years, but I got a story, Art.
All right, I know, but that's all right. Right now, I just need your vote, sir. Truth or trash?
Yeah, it's true.
It's true.
Oh, yeah. I've handled lots of similar cases. Oh,
okay, all right. I appreciate the vote. Thank you very much. That's one for true. On my wild card line, you're on the air. The decapitation story, truth or trash?
I would have to say it's truth. Based on a lot of these, believe it or not, stories that they've run on TV, you got to go along with it.
All right, thank you very much. First time caller line, you are on the air. Does it have the ring of truth or the stench of trash?
Stench of trash.
Trash.
He's lying.
Lying through her teeth, huh?
Yeah, that I think it might have happened, but it wasn't her friend. I think that's on the cover of the Inquirer this month.
Yeah, it might be. It certainly was told. Well, all right, thank you. That's two for truth, one for trash. On the international line, where are you?
Hi, I'm calling from Taiwan, and I have a truth or trash story for you, but let me tell you that that last story was trash.
You think it was trash?
Yeah.
How good is yours?
Mine's pretty good, I think.
All right, and you're in Taiwan, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, I should give you some preference. All right, I'm going to put you on hold then.
All right.
All right? And I'm going to take one more vote, the crucial tie-breaking vote on the head came off but guy survived story. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes.
All right, you are going to be the deciding vote for this very earnest young lady who told us a story about the man who got decapitated but hung in there to kill.
Well, she sounds like a nice girl, but I hate to say it, but sounds like trash.
Trash, huh?
Yeah, I don't mean to say it in those words because I like to be polite, but it
No, we don't mince words here.
It sounds like a fabrication.
Uh-huh. All right. I appreciate your call and your honesty. Thank you very much. And now we go back to the young lady who told the story, and by a vote of 3-2, they have said it was utter complete garbage.
Well, I hate to disappoint them, but it was most definitely true and was recorded in Ripley's Believe It or Not.
I'll be damned.
Yes.
Ripley, so people can go to Ripley's Believe It or Not, and they can confirm your story.
That's right. It's known as the man from Fowler who survived having his head cut off. My chainsaw.
You blew him away, dear. Thank
That's
you.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Take care. Ah, yeah. She did great. She got you. Ha, 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 ha. All right, to Taiwan out across the Pacific. Where are you in Taiwan?
I'm in Taipei.
Taipei, all right.
Yeah. And I listen to you on the Internet, and I appreciate having that service so I can listen to you every day.
Yes, indeed.
But I get to hear you in the afternoon, unlike everyone else who has to stay up all night.
What are you doing in Taipei?
I work. I'm a professor here in Taipei.
Oh, you're a professor, all right.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear it.
My story isn't as wild as having a head cut off, but when I first came here to Taiwan, I did not speak any Chinese.
Hmm.
And, you know, I spoke English and got along very, very well. But I started to study Chinese, and I think that anybody who has probably studied a language knows if you study a language for a long time, you start to dream about it at night.
That's right.
Okay. Now, the strange thing about me was when I would dream, I would be dreaming, you know, partly in English, partly in Chinese. What would happen to me, I would dream down to a point, and then I wouldn't be able to communicate anymore. I didn't know the word, and I would wake up. And so I had this terrible insomnia for weeks and weeks.
You're kidding. So in other words, you could never, because you were dreaming in Chinese, you could never quite complete a dream, and that would make you wake up?
Every time I was trying to interact with someone, I would get to a point where communication would start to break down, and I could feel frustrated. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, of course, I was asleep, but I felt that frustration, and that would wake me up. Until there was one night when I was having a dream, and I remember the dream very clearly. I was asking for directions. I don't remember where it was I wanted to go.
Yeah.
But I was asking someone for directions.
Right.
And was unable to communicate and was getting frustrated. Just before I was about to wake up or wake myself up, the man in the dream said, stop. Don't do that. That's your problem. And he said, follow me.
Uh-huh.
And so, okay, now this gets kind of disappointing because it doesn't take me to any place like real interesting or anything. Matter of fact, I don't even remember where we went. We just like walked around. He said to me, I don't know why you're lost. You've been here before. And led me around. I woke up the next morning and I could speak Chinese fluently.
Wow. Let me hear something fluent in Chinese.
I could tell you the same story I just told you.
No, that's pretty good. No,
that's what I said.
No, hey, listen, that's some story. And so now you're living happily in Taipei, rattling off Chinese as you wish, right?
Yes, and let me say one thing. It's for that reason that I believe in reincarnation, because he said to me very clearly, you've been here before. I don't know why you're lost. And I have this feeling that that's what he was saying, that you already have all this information.
Yes, and obviously some switch got thrown, and boom, you could speak Chinese fluently.
Exactly.
Oh, no, that's a great story, sir. Stay right where you are. Do not hang up. Do not leave. Do not get discouraged. We're going to take a vote now, all right?
Yeah, sure thing.
All right. Pretty good story as they go, I would say. All right, here it comes. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. You think the man from Taipei was telling the absolute truth in English or muttering trash in Chinese?
Muttering trash.
Trash.
I've got an awesome story for you, Art.
Well, you'll have to get trash. I know, but you're... Well, I'll try. Hold on. Just hold on. I can't put everybody on hold, obviously. All right, well, that's one trash. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
The man who could suddenly, miraculously become fluent in Chinese, truth or stench?
I think it was believable up to the point where he became fluent. I think that was trash.
You think it was trash?
Yeah. Hey, Art.
No, I can't take more right now. You'll have to call back. A wild card line, you are on the air, and you're on the panel judging this man in Taipei, Taiwan.
Oh, absolutely true. Absolutely true.
True.
Because,
true.
You know, I had a similar thing, a dream that I was the son of man, and I never woke up from the dream.
I understand. You're still the son of man. All right, fine. But you give it the ring of truth. First time caller line, you're on the air. Taruth or trash?
You know, I do believe it's true.
You do?
Yes, I do. I think it's true.
You now make that... All right, thank you. It is a tie vote. The next call will decide it. At least two people out of four think that's a true story. Wild card line, you're on the air. You will cast the deciding vote on the man from Taipei, Taiwan.
Brother Bell, I believe it's true.
You think it's true?
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding. I'll be damned. I wonder if it really is true. We're going to put him back on the line right now and find out whether, in fact, it is true. All the way back to Taipei, Taiwan. You're back on the air again, sir. Actually, they think by 3-2, it's a true story.
And the reason why they think that it is true is because my English is just as good as my Chinese and every bit as convincing. Of course that's not true. But I'll tell you what, everything.
You got him.
Including the part about waking up. The part about waking up from a dream, all of that was true. During the period of time when I was learning.
Well, you see, the best lies come from a kernel of truth. They're most easily told because, you know, part of it was true. So why not just expand on it? I must say, sir, you lied with definite class.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're very welcome and take care. All right, now you all have an idea of how truth or trash works. So, you see, I'm going to be looking for similar stories, and as I said earlier, you are welcome to fabricate all you wish or tell the absolute truth. It really, it doesn't matter to me. So far, though, the juries have doing very well. Now, what does that say about mankind in general? Does it say we're really gullible? Got a couple of them, though. Nailed a couple of them. First one, remember that? Well, I guess there'll be a sort of a gullibility quotient built as the night goes on. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
Oh, baby. You're not going to believe this, but remember at the beginning of the program, those that heard the very beginning, and I said, Deke Richards in the state of Maine, if you're out there, communicate with me the same way you did the first time, which I'll tell you now was by fax. He sent me a 3-page fax of an incredible story, and somehow, just now, I've got Deke on the line. I never did get his numbers. He just got through. And get his phone number, his area code, any of that. He just got through. Deke Richards got through. What an incredible story you're about to hear. So we'll just let it be the next truth or trash story. But I want to let him tell it. It is absolutely amazing. Stay right where you are. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from April 20th, 2001.
What do you figure the odds of Deke managing to get through would be? It just has to be about 1 billion to 1. Deke Richards is... where are you, Deke?
I'm up here in northern Maine, up here in the sticks with the deer, the bear, and the moose.
All right. You're obviously on a cell phone. So somehow you got this through to me earlier in the afternoon today. I thought it was an amazing fax. Pick the best spot you can for your cell phone, and go ahead and tell your story, Deke.
How we doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I was stationed in Germany there from 79 to 84.
Right.
My first company that I was assigned to was the 29th Supply and Service Company in Baumholder.
Yes, sir.
And they were only authorized by their T.O.N.E., one wrecker and 163 whiskey, and I was the man.
Okay.
And during Reforger of 82, anybody that's ever been in the military knows what Reforger is. It's return to forces to Germany.
Yes.
And during late September, early October, there was a UFO that crashed in the woods up there in the Fulda Gap area.
The Fulda Gap area? That's where everybody always thought the Russians would come pouring across.
Right. That was the 1K zone. Now, the 29th Supply and Service Company was assigned to run support for the 11th ACR, which is the 11th Armored Cavalry Regiment in Bad Hersfeld.
Right.
And anyway, this UFO had crashed about 10 clicks from us. It made a very loud racket. When it hit hard. And we were assigned to go out there. Now, there was, in our sister company, the 85th Maintenance Battalion, which was the 48th Maintenance Company, they had a wrecker as well. And we were right there at Station Keep about 10 clicks away.
When you say a wrecker, what do you mean?
I'm talking about the 5-ton wrecker. Anybody that's ever served in the military knows about the 5-ton wrecker. It recovers just about anything you want to recover with exception of a tank. Any wheeled vehicle,
right,
it can recover.
Yes, but you've got to remember.
Very diversified.
Yes, but Deke, you've got to remember, not everybody was in the military. So they're listening,
okay,
to your story. Okay,
well,
go
ahead. This wrecker's got 2 winches. Well, actually 3 winches because it's got a winch for the boom. And it's got a 20-ton winch on the back and a 10-ton winch up front.
Right.
But by using extra snatch blocks and extra boom supports, it drastically increases the capacity.
All right.
That wrecker.
Yeah, gotcha.
And in the nomenclature, just in case, is an M543A2.
Okay.
And so anyway, we had to go out into the woods, and we were following the 293rd Combat Engineers were there up there in Bad Hirschfeld as well. And they had a cat, and we were following them. Now, this wrecker is a 6x6 vehicle as well. I mean, it's...
Did they tell you what you were going out to recover?
No. No, they did not.
All right. So at this point, you didn't know.
No, they did not. We just knew that we were on our way out there to do something.
Okay.
And we were under heavy military police escort, and the D8 cat was out there. Well, it was a D7. Excuse me, I misspoke.
That's all right.
It was a D7, and they were blazing a trail right out through this thing. That was a heavily wooded area. Now, after, in retrospect, they couldn't use any choppers because it was a heavily wooded area.
Right.
And I might add that the official news release for this was that an F-4 aircraft had crashed. Well, let me tell you something. When we got to the scene, there was 5 bodies laying down on the ground. They were outside the craft.
Describe the craft first.
Okay, the craft was, it looked like stainless steel. It was very, very shiny. It was very shiny. The tip of it was down into the dirt, about half of it. After we had gotten out, we had realized that half the craft was literally down in the dirt. And the backside, of course, was out.
Oh my God.
The left side was ripped open. You know, like if you took a can opener and just ripped a can wide open.
Yes.
This thing was ripped from one end, from stem to stern. And there was these tubes hanging out of this thing. And it had this green ooze coming out of these.
Oh.
Coming out of the tubes.
Yes.
And I personally thought, I mean, having a large background in mechanics and everything else, I thought to myself that this must be the engine, the mechanism that drove this craft.
Uh-huh.
And the bodies were outside the craft probably 10 to 15 feet away. I mean, it looked like that they were, this is my personal, I did not see them walk because they were dead when we got there.
All right, describe the bodies.
Okay, the bodies were about 4.5 to 5 feet long. They were on the ground laying down. They had black suits on them. Now, on their right part of their chest, they had this weird writing. It resembled nothing that I've ever seen. I mean, I've seen hieroglyphics and everything else, but it resembled nothing that I've ever seen.
Okay.
And the writing on these black suits, the writing was in like in a silver glitter form. So they packed up the bodies. They didn't waste any time.
Did they? Wait. The bodies. Can you remember what the faces looked like? I mean, was it like humans? Were there noses, mouths, ears?
Humanoid. They were humanoid. Some of them were face down. Some of them were face down, you know, like you were walking and then you just plopped right down.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a
real good look.
Close of an inspection to where I was right down there kneeling to them like picking up a stone. I was about 4 feet from them.
All right.
All right. They had gray heads. They had gray heads and very, very small ears, about the size of a quarter. And so anyway, they packed up the bags or they
what was your what was your job there? What were you there to do?
My job was to pick up the wrecker. I mean, excuse me. I'm very nervous here.
No, I understand.
And
your job was to pick up what? The craft?
Right. My job was to pick up the craft. And I had to, we couldn't use chains on this. They didn't want us to use chains or anything. It didn't take them long to get a government team there. And I mean, the flurry of activity was just incredible. I had to get my shovel off my wrecker, get underneath this thing and dig. Now, they had a radiation crew that came in there with a Geiger counter and was checking for radiation. Okay? And there was no radiation whatsoever.
Okay.
So they had me and another gentleman that was operating the other wrecker. We had to get underneath this and to dig underneath the craft so we could put slings underneath there.
Gotcha.
Canvas slings. And we had to pick up these canvas slings, and we had to put them around both boom supports so they could back a flatbed truck underneath it. Now, we didn't. We just lifted it up so the oversized flatbed truck could come underneath there and load this thing. They tarped it, and they waited for darkness to move it out of there.
They waited for who?
Darkness.
Darkness, of course, yes, all
right. Right, they waited for darkness to move this thing out of there.
Did they keep you there the whole time?
Yes, they did. We could not move for the whole 3 days that we were there.
3 days?
3 days, 72 hours. Because they had the teams that had to come in and everything else. They were feeding us right off the back end of a deuce and a half, the whole nine yards.
How many military and or government personnel ultimately were there and had knowledge of this, do you think?
I'd say about 50 to 60 people.
50 to 60.
Yeah, because they had people there that was picking up the debris field. The debris field was incredible. I mean, they were told to pick up every little piece, even the size of a cigarette, but just pick it up. They had to sanitize the whole area. They had people come in there with blow torches and blowtorch, you know, set a fire to the roots and everything else. And then the engineers came in there and they buried everything. And then they took us up to the CERN up there, Bad Hirschfeld. And they took us into the barracks under lock and key, I might add. And nobody was allowed to leave in the whole barracks. Now, 50 to 60 people can fill up a barracks pretty fast.
You bet.
Okay, now usually in a company, a barracks has usually 200 people, but we were on the first floor. We were in the first and the 13th building there.
Right.
And a full bird colonel, which I've never met before, came into the billets, and he had said, you know, he gave us the greeting and everything, and he told us, quote, he said, gentlemen, he said, the events that you have witnessed in the last 72 hours is not to be discussed in any way, shape, fashion, or form. And to do so, UCMJ will certainly be involved. That is Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Yes.
You will wind up 20 to 30 years in Fort Leavenworth. And there's no doubt in my mind that you certainly don't want to do that. And most of all, nobody on a need-to-know basis is to know this information. And believe me, there's nobody out there with a need-to-know basis. I have not spoken of this incident until now.
All right, Mike. The obvious question now, Deke, is... with such a threat laid down, even that long ago, why are you now speaking out?
Because of everything that's going on. I'm not in the military anymore.
I know. Deke, what you're describing is a crash probably as significant as the one in Roswell, New Mexico, that everybody talks about. I mean, every bit as significant. A craft, dead bodies, the whole thing. Any idea, by the way, what happened to the bodies?
The bodies, all I know is that the bodies were put in the body bags. They were then placed in special boxes that had ice in them. And the tops were put on there. I mean, they put more ice on top. They put the lids onto the boxes.
Uh-huh.
Then they loaded them up onto a deuce and a half, and they and it drove out of here. That's all I know about them. That's all I know about them.
All right.
And, you know, 20 years have gone by, but people would say, well, 20 years, you remember this in graphic detail. Let me tell you something, Art. You see something like that, you remember it the rest of your days.
Well, I'm
sure. The rest of your days, you remember it. And, you know, I am not going to stand on this story anymore. And I know that there's other people out there that know about it.
Okay, that was where I was going next, Deke. What I would like to do is ask, if there, what company were you in? The people that were there that might be out in the audience right now that could verify your story, corroborate your story, don't give me names, but I mean...
No, I will not do that.
But what kind of people should we be looking for? People who are in what military group?
All right. Now, I was in the 29th Supply and Service Company in Baumholder, okay? The 293rd Combat Engineers, Alpha, Bravo, and Echo companies were up there.
Right.
And the 48th Maintenance Company was up there in Bad Hirschfeld. Okay. The other wrecker operator, the driver that drove the deuce and a half for the bodies, the driver that drove the flatbed that had the craft on it, and the other soldiers that were there doing a police call. And also, I'm sure that the sanitation team, and that was 20 years ago.
I understand.
What are they going to do to us now? It's like, nah, come up and find me, you know?
Well,
and
I would never say nah, not the government. But you may be right. I mean, look, 20 years has passed, but still in all, you're telling us that we've had contact, albeit with dead aliens, or maybe dead, for all you know, maybe they weren't dead. Or
try this one on for size, Art. After this had taken place, they had stick me in a psycho ward for 4 weeks because I was having nightmares about this.
I can imagine you would.
This was wicked bad. And
did you know, wait a minute. There were 3 days during all of this, as all of this was going on. Obviously, you had an opportunity to talk with others. What was their reaction like? I mean, this is not like you're walking in on a...
I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh.
Now, they had set up makeshift tents for us. I mean, they had bought in tents, and we had just popped them up. There was three of us to tents. Okay, we were on our cots, and we would just sit there and look at each other. And this is, I don't believe, I won't say what we actually said.
Yeah, course, please don't, I can imagine.
Right.
Yeah.
But we were just standing there looking at each other in just utter shock. There was a couple of gentlemen that did go into shock because they saw these things. I mean, can you imagine the guys that were picking up the bodies to put them into body bags?
No,
can you imagine
them
guys?
No, I can't.
No.
Those guys should still be out there, though, and alive, probably.
We weren't even playing cards. We weren't doing nothing. This was incredible. I mean,
Do you know how it was discerned that this crash even occurred? I mean, was this seen on radar, or do you not know that aspect of it?
Boom.
Boom.
A great big huge boom.
So,
a great big huge boom with a concussion wave and everything. Knocked out windows and everything. I mean, it hit the ground hard.
How far were you from the crash site when it crashed?
About 10 clicks.
About 10 clicks.
Yeah, that's about 10 kilometers, which is about 6 miles.
That's a pretty big bang then. So even at 10 miles,
yes,
it was heard by everybody.
It was a big bang, a thud, and then you heard the concussion. And, I mean, it was knocking out windows all over the place. There was no doubt about it. That's how we knew it just happened to happen.
Did you see any of the interior of the craft?
The only interior part of the craft that I saw is where the gouge was, where the tubes
right.
were. And these tubes were like 5 inches in diameter, you know. And we couldn't really, because some of it was still down in the dirt, and you would literally have to be down on the ground and look up inside of it, okay?
In other words, the way the tear was, you'd have to be down at ground level looking up.
Right. You'd literally have to lay down on the ground, put your chest right down on the ground, put your ear down into the dirt and everything else and look up. But you could just see these tubes where that gas was. The tubes were hanging out with that green ooze coming out of them. Now, it wasn't gushing out like a fire hose, right? It was dripping out. And there was that green stuff all over there. And at night, it was luminescent.
All right, listen to me.
It was like glowing in the dark.
All right, listen to me. One more time, I want you to appeal to the various groups that would be out there and that could email me. I'm artbell@mindspring.com. That's artbell@mindspring.com. I don't want you to go off the line at the break here because I want to get your cell phone number from
you.
All right? Are you willing to give it to me?
Yeah, I can give it to you off the air, though.
Off the air. That's right. Off the air. No problem. But once again, name the groups that you think would have men that would still be alive that would remember everything you have just talked about.
Well, this is AED2, and most of the people were young men. I'm sure they would be. 29th Supply and Service Company out of Bomb Holder. The 293rd Alpha Bravo Charlie Echo Company out of Bomb Holder. The 48th Maintenance Company out of Bomb Holder. The driver for the Deuce and a Half. The driver for the flatbed truck. Anybody that did police call out there that day, look, they're not going to come and get you. Just email Art, please.
All right.
I mean, this has got to be told.
Well, if what you're saying is true, and if we get corroboration of it, then it's every bit as big as Roswell in New Mexico, and maybe bigger because it's much more recent. All right, I want you to stay right there. I'll take you off the air and get your cell phone number, all right?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, that's it for this week, folks. Don't forget, tomorrow night, we're going to have a really special event. Tomorrow night, the first program ever done with the late Father Malachi Martin is going to be here at normal showtime, 10 o'clock. The one I did with Father Malachi Martin regarding exorcism, it's something not to be missed tomorrow night. From the high desert tonight, I'm Art Bell. Ta-ta.